surprised.
This is nuts, man. I'm
surprised he hasn't called me yet.
We might be witnessing the end of the LeBron James era. Where sports opinions collide, dead in sports. I'm your host, Kenneth B. Inge. See, those are the turnovers.
We watching a game right now. So,
but you know that was a hell of an interception.
Game two, Cleveland, hell of an interception. Boston.
But you can't. You just got to take care of the ball, man. It's the playoffs. Especially like
live.
While
getting our live reactions after watching this game.
While Boston's kind of somewhat cold, their shots are not falling the way they did in the game one. But anyway, sorry. Yeah, like everybody said. Look at this shit. Well, let me stuff. Anyway, Dead in Sports recorded at Dead in the Studios in Atlanta. You already heard B and FIFO a few seconds ago commenting on the game. Make sure you guys subscribe to the podcast, subscribe to the YouTube channel, subscribe to Dead in Hip Hop. On YouTube, subscribe to the Is the Mic Still On podcast. Got a brand new episode coming out tomorrow, which will be Wednesday, today, at the time that this one dropped. And also subscribe to, of course, check out the homie, the Manny. Not the Manny. The Technical File podcast. Check out Strictly Hoop Hop.
Hip Hop.
I mean, I'm screwed. Chris Platty.
Strictly hip-hop.
But yeah,
you need a coffee, Ken?
I had a coffee. That's why I'm talking so fast.
Okay.
And, I had iced coffee from McDonald's. And of course, the homie, the 12 Cow podcast. So check him out as well. We got a lot of new stuff happening, man. SeatGeek. We're working with SeatGeek now. So if you guys need any tickets or anything like that, go to SeatGeek. You can download the app. FIFO and I used it when we went to the Lakers game.
Mm-hmm.
When you do it, please, please, please use the code DEADIN. Use the code DEADIN. It helps support the show. Also, listen to us on Radio Public. Yeah, well, no. Listen to there's the Mike Stallone podcast on Radio Public. Eventually, we'll be on there as well. So there's that. A lot has happened since we last recorded, which was
the game ones.
Yeah, the game ones.
Yeah, the Western Conference and the Eastern Conference Finals. That was Thursday, I believe.
Yeah, so we kind of made our predictions prior to the games commencing
because we knew it was set at that.
It was set. And let me ask you guys: were you guys surprised about anything that happened in the game ones?
No, right? I wasn't surprised. Like I said, if y'all listen to the our Western Conference, East Conference Finals preview, I predicted Boston in 7 and Golden State in 5. And, you know, the way game one went, it was just like, you know, Golden State looked unstoppable. You know, it's like a healthy Golden State, no one's beating them in a 7-game series. And, you know, Brad Stevens is showing that he can put dog in his guys and they can fight. And you saw what happened in game one of this Eastern Conference Finals. So, yeah, nothing surprised me, FIFO, with the way game one looked so far.
I feel you. I think that I was a bit surprised in Houston how they looked.
They was trading basketball for basketball, though, at one point. They was balling.
But here's the thing, right? Like, James Harden has been balling in game ones throughout the playoffs. CP did his thing. Mm-hmm. We saw Eric Gordon had a little bit of life. Right. But at the end of the day, we saw how easy Golden State gets shots versus how hard Houston has to work. And over 7, you can't beat a team 4 times when you have to work that hard. Like, if we just need a bucket, who's going to go get us a bucket?
Right. And then it seemed like I feel like Houston's offense started being iso ball in the second half. They started
out that way.
You think so?
Yeah, they did. Because you got to remember, B-Man, like, their offense is predicated off of pick and roll in James Harden.
But it just looks so
But they didn't even
ISO
do that,
ball.
Though.
Yeah, I would say it looked so iso. From what I remember in the second half, it was just like iso.
Well, here's the thing.
They somewhat did that. So what they did, here's what I think. Here's my assessment of that. Is that they basically Kerr baited them into that one-on-one. by having him. They knew they were going to run pick and roll, get Kevin Looney switched on him. And if you're looking at Kevin Looney and you're James Harden, you like, or you CP3, you be like, oh yeah, I can take him. I can take him. And that's what happened. So they became 1-on-1 and 1-on-1 and 1-on-1. And I'm like, there was no offense.
Well, again, if your offense is, LeBron to the locker room, second quarter, he did take a big shot. He was kind of flexing that. I want to say it was the right shoulder. You know, this man's indestructible. So this is very, very, very peculiar right now.
We're about to see the jaw.
Was it the jaw? Yeah, I think it'll be fine. Yeah, that looked like a little love tap. But in terms of Houston and Golden State, if you look, if their offense is predicated off of pick and roll, who's setting the pick?
Right.
Who's setting the pick? It was Clint Capella, right? Yeah. And what did we see primarily in that second half? Where was he? Wasn't on the floor. He's primarily on the bench, even though he had an excellent defensive game, right? Like, we've seen him switch off a couple of times on perimeter guys. Steph Curry, he got a couple cookies, you know. So I think his impact was felt. But like you said, to a certain extent, with all of the switching and everything, and when you're James Harden and CP and you see a big man on you, you're going to try to take him. So with that being said, then D'Antoni took Clint Capella out and they went to a small lineup to try to match what Golden State was putting out there, because I don't know if you guys want to call him this, but the Hampton Five, you know, I don't know where the hell they got that from.
Wait.
They said they met at the Hamptons when they went to recruit KD.
KD. Oh, okay. Yes. So that's why it's the Hampton Five. Okay, so fine. The Hampton Five, right? Like, when you have that lineup, you know, they dubbed it. I didn't dub it. It is what it is.
Is it any better than the Banana Boat crew, though? You know,
I think the Hampton Five had a better ring to it.
Maybe.
But either way, when you have that lineup, it's extremely difficult to try to outplay that lineup. And I think this is the same thing that we saw with the other Golden State team against that number one Dallas team, right? That one year, I can't remember the year. But in watching that, I remember telling everybody I talked basketball to, championship teams don't change how they play to match you. You have to change to match the championship team. And that Dallas team tried to change when Avery Johnson was the head coach. They tried to change to match that Baron Davis and Matt Barnes and Al Harrington Golden State team. And what happened? They were the number one seed, won 60-plus games, and they lost in the first round to the eighth seed. So that's kind of sort of what we're seeing, right? Like, every team has to match Golden State. Golden State going to do what they want to do. You're gonna have to try to outplay us doing what you do. That's not what's going to happen, especially the way that Houston plays. Pick and roll and one-on-one. Like, how are you going to beat Golden State when they're every possession down, they get easy buckets? Yep. Whether it's an easy three, whether it's a drive to the lane, whether they're posting up KD, which I felt that was definitely a wrinkle we saw a little bit more than what we see in the regular season, especially with this smaller lineup. He is their post presence, and he was dominant. Who won it? Everybody can get it.
Everybody got it.
Everybody did get it. You know what I'm saying? So, what did I say before the series started? They don't have nothing for KD. They don't have, and we saw it game one. How many times do you think KD's going to be off in this series? Maybe one game, and maybe an extra half on top of that, right?
You still got to worry about Clay. Steph.
All of them. All of them. That's crazy. But at the end of the day, KD's going to be the difference for Golden State, and I think Clint Capella is going to be the difference for Houston. And who's the better out of those two?
KD.
I take KD all day.
You know, I was just disappointed, man. I kept waiting for that free-flowing, fast-paced Houston offense. And
you saw it in the first quarter, though.
It was still just way too much one-on-one for me. And Eric Gordon is going to be the death of this team if he came by a shot. He's actually putting on a James Harden-esque performance. And it's been this way in the playoffs. But, yeah, like you say, he found a little bit of life, but it was just all on his face. He couldn't do anything right, and it was starting to wear down on him. But everybody else got to be involved, man. And Chris Paul had three assists. He had three assists. That shows you the ball is sticking and they're playing too many one-on-one. And I think D'Antoni got outcoached. He got baited into a trap, and he fell for it. And then in this game, they were like, KD, we're going to give you the rock. Bring us home. You go be LeBron, and we're going to give it to you every time, and you just go score. And he put up bucket after bucket, and it had to be demoralizing. Everything James Harden put up, you know, yeah, he was matching him super damn near point for point, but it was tough. And, you know, and you don't – because they were making him do what they wanted him to do, they were like, we'll live with that. But when you play a tough D and he turn around and it's, the Nets are just snapping, what are you going to do with that? That's all you heard. And the Nets were popping. And it was like you had to be demoralized. And they never could really get on a run. And I just – I don't know, man. D'Antoni – and he always smiling. What are you always smiling about? Why do you not look concerned? Because
he's still getting paid from the Lakers, Ken. Right. That's why he's smiling.
Jeez, man, look concerned.
He still got them Lakers checks coming. That's what he is.
He's way too like, oh, you know, it's okay. You know, we gotta make him miss a couple of shots.
Do you understand the story of D'Antoni though? Like why he is how he is. So back in Italy, right? You know, he grew up in the States or whatever. But when he started pursuing a professional career, his coach was way too demanding, way too harsh, and he was a baller, but he had the yips. He got in the game, and he couldn't play the way he knew he could play. So once he got into coaching, he said he'll never do that. So that's why his demeanor is an upbeat demeanor. He's not going to get down on his guys. It's always positive. He has positive reinforcement. So that's partly the reason why you see a smile on his face like that. Another interesting thing, the way like D'Antoni don't really have a system, you know, like
they had more of a I thought they had a little bit more of a system earlier this year though. Well, did I? Because we talked about
and I told you what before. It was back then. It's pick and roll. Look, what D'Antoni does.
The same
does,
thing in Phoenix with him when that
exactly. What they do is they have slight wrinkles to pick and rolls and slight actions on weak sides. We didn't see that last night. We didn't see that last night. We didn't see any type of action off of the ball. We didn't see it. People were just standing there.
Yep.
But D'Antoni's quote-unquote system is to get up quick open shots, not necessarily contested shots, unless you're James Harden.
7 seconds or less.
7 seconds or less. I don't think that's the pace that they're playing with now.
No, it's not, but that was
– but that was the Phoenix Suns.
It's
the
modified version.
Exactly. This is still predicated primarily off of pick and roll. And – D'Antoni came out of his mouth and said, sometimes I don't even know what they're doing out there. I just allow them to play basketball.
Whoa. He said that?
He said sometimes he doesn't know what they're doing. Like
he said that this year?
This year.
As a coach.
As a coach.
A head coach.
But here's the thing, though. Like, when you're playing basketball, right, and you're saying, hey, this is working, guys. Continue to do that. And you have ball handlers like CP and James Harden, sometimes you let them go. Right. I'll give you a story. Magic Johnson, right? Magic Johnson, I don't remember if it was the game or I don't remember if it was practice, but Pat Riley was trying to get on Magic. Run the play. Magic looks at Pat Riley and says, he points at his head and says, this is the play. You see, like when you have great playmakers like that, at times stretches in the game, you let them go.
It's one thing if that's Magic telling you that. It's one thing if that's CP3 telling you that. I don't know so much about James Harden.
You tripping. Ken, James Harden was the best playmaker at OKC. James Harden is a top five playmaker in the NBA. If James Harden says, coach, don't worry about that, I got it, you got to let him get it.
You can, but I think for me, CP3 is the head. Like, that's what he does. He is the point guard.
But you have the points guard. Like James Harden is the points guard. And that's what you got. That's
points guard.
Look, let me ask you this, Ken. Do you think that CP is a better basketball player than James Harden right now?
No, age caught up to him.
Okay. So if your best player comes to you and says, coach, I got it, you're going to roll with it. You just going to roll with it. You're going to roll with it. You know, until you got to rein them in. Oh, three bad shots. Hey, timeout. Come on. Let's talk about this. We can't do this no more. This is what we're going to do. This is the play we're going to run out of this timeout. You know what I'm saying? Like, but that's what basketball is, right? And I think that's what true leadership is. It's a little bit of give, a little bit of take, a little bit of give, a little bit of take. And you got to be in cahoots with your best players. And, you know, I don't think D'Antoni said that in a way to, oh, well, shit, I don't know what they be doing.
Yeah,
he knows what he's doing. But at times, you just let your best basketball players play ball. You know, like, you mean to tell me that Lou calls everything for Cleveland Or you think like he, hey, Bron, can we get an easy shot this time? You know what I'm saying? Like right. Sometimes you just got to talk to your best player in that way. You know, extremely candid. So switching over to Cleveland, Cleveland, Boston, has anything surprised you in this series?
Somewhat. Get on the floor. I just LeBron's overall performance in game one. I know those are fill out games for him, typically, but look at this. See, this is what I'm talking about. Like, those are the careless mistakes. LeBron can't be making those. He has 7 turnovers. This is, what, 3rd? Mm-hmm. Like, and why are you trying to press the ball? Why are you
getting the ball up court?
Why? Because you're holding the ball for the last shot anyway in the half. There was no need.
I didn't see the time, but were they trying to play 2-for-1 in that possession?
They probably was. I think they was.
Look at this shit.
I think they was trying to go for 2-for-1. Because the shot clock was like at 28.
Was it?
Yeah. So I think they were trying to go for 2-for-1.
But as a champion, you understand that possession of the ball is more important than a 2-for-1. Especially if you turn it over and give them an easy bucket.
But they're one and the same, right? Like, if possessions are important and you playing 2-for-1, you're trying to get 2 possessions based off of the time.
But if it was 28 seconds, it takes probably about 4 seconds for them to catch the ball, shoot it. So by the time they get it back, it wouldn't have made that much of a difference anyway.
First of all, a catch and shoot takes at least 0.4.
But I'm talking about the pass.
But if the pass was going to an open 3-point shooter, that would have taken – you could have got the ball back. You could have played that 2-for-1.
They can't do anything right. Who was that, Jeff Green? Why is Jeff Green passing the ball in when he's not even your best passer? This is the type of stuff that they would hit too.
Bang. Ooh. It was pretty close.
But that you got to
– Half time.
Here's the thing, and I'll get back to game one. In that situation, LeBron and the Cavs have dictated this game up to this point. So, look at this. Damn, 25.
12 for 26, the rest of the squad. Jesus.
And everybody's – he has 25, the rest of the team has 30. LeBron has dictated basically the Boston Celtics are feeling somewhat of LeBron's pressure on them in this game because he's coming out, he's in that zone. You know, you ain't going to be able to stop him. You're just going to try to, you know, just wait for it to wear off and hope nobody else get going. So, you know, if you're up 10 or 11, that's significant because, you know, they're still young and they know they've seen him do this before. So you're just going to try to weather the storm as best you can. You can't give these guys – I don't care what anybody says. Yeah, they're mature for their age in terms of being able – their basketball presence on the court and being able to not get overwhelmed by, like, the moment. But at the same time, it's game two. You know, LeBron is on one, and you're down 10, and you don't think this is going to end because you've seen what he's done so far, not only in this playoffs but in the past. You can't give them confidence. Jaylen Brown came out. B saw it. Jaylen mm-hmm. Brown came out. He put up 13
like what?
Or 14.
Came out like
he was
what?
Like, I see you, LeBron. Right. You put up 23, 21. I'll see you. I'll match you 14. I'm not you, but this is the closest I can get. Mm-hmm. So you got to keep them down. And to make those type of mistakes, I don't know, man. You got to put them down. But anyway, so I just hate when they do that because they just tend to get very careless with the ball. And very, very sloppy, and they make the game harder. Back to game one. The thing that surprised me the most was Al Horford. And what I've noticed in the second round against Philly and somewhat against Milwaukee is that he's basically their Draymond Green.
Mm-hmm.
He just does everything on the court. And it didn't matter who was on him, he was cooking them. He was cooking them. It was barbecue chicken, and nobody could do anything with him.
Mm-hmm.
Like 8-for-10 or 20 points, and everything just went in. And that was the thing that I noticed, just the way that they use him. And I don't think Cleveland was quite ready for that because here you got Al Horford bringing the ball up, or he's at the top of the key and he's initiating the offense. And then if you're Tristan Thompson or you're Kevin Love, then you got to come up and guard him in a spot where you're probably not necessarily comfortable with. So that was one of the takeaways that I pulled for that. I didn't really think that Cleveland would win game one. I thought it would either be a blowout or something like real. mainly kind of thought, it was going to be a blowout,
like the first game.
Yeah, they you know, the Indiana game one, LeBron has lost like what 11 game ones. He's 8-3 in the series after losing game one, so they're not problematic for him based on his record. But so, and you know, he said it, they're like fill out games for him, and a lot of the stuff that, I won't say a lot of the stuff, but some of the stuff, it seemed like he was just trying to figure out, you know, the defensive coverages, how they were going to play him. He even said, and now I know how they're going to play me. And we've seen like his adjustment.
So pretty much LeBron is Floyd Mayweather, and the game ones is this Floyd Mayweather first three rounds.
I don't
fill him out.
I don't like it.
Adjust it. See what he do.
But that's typically,
that's what it sounds like. Just the way you described it, it sounds like he's Floyd Mayweather in his playoff series.
And it's not what it's. He said it too. It's not. It's like we often kind of speculated that that's what he was doing. But you know, he said it. He was like,
for me, game one has always been a fill out game for me. If you ever followed my history, so you know, I got a good sense of the way they played me today, and you know, and how I play going into game two.
So those were his words. And yeah, I don't like it, because I think that you can do both, right? You can fill the game out and you can dominate the game, you know, so you don't have to, like, you can fill the game out in the first quarter, the first half.
Right.
And then you can come out and just abuse them. And when they got the ball down to, when they got the score down to 14, I was like, okay, I think they got a shot to come out and win this. And then just
Boston just wouldn't win away with it.
Not getting securing a defensive rebound. Marcus Smart hit a big shot.
Mm-hmm.
LeBron didn't really contest it.
Damn.
The Euro step, they just let Tatum go, 90 feet or something like that. You know, so, and then, of course, afterwards, everybody think Marcus Morris is the LeBron stopper. So you know, but. But I was just most interested in seeing what's going to happen tonight. And, you know, to be honest, and now I got one more thing. To be honest, like, I kind of had a feeling that they might win tonight. I think it could possibly.
Hey, as in Boston?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I
think it can go. I think it'll end up being 2-2.
Coming and, back, game five.
Yep, game five would be the swing game. And I think that would be the one that they could possibly win and close it out in Cleveland, which means they would have to win four straight. LeBron don't want to do that, but I think he'll definitely want to go ahead and get this win tonight.
I tell you this, Boston take one of them games in Cleveland, it's a wrap.
If they win tonight?
If they win tonight and then they split in Cleveland, it's a wrap.
It's a wrap,
It's a wrap.
Yes, it is.
Because
that supporting cast, man, this is
–
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. The reason why I say it's a wrap is because we're seeing Superman Bron, right? And if they can withstand Superman Bron, then you can beat the Cavs.
You can beat them.
That's the whole, the way this Cavs team is constructed.
LeBron is giving you all you got right now.
Exactly. Like, and they're right still now. In the game.
And they still in the game. It ain't like a 22 point.
Exactly. Elite. They're an 8-0 run away.
Yes.
They're an 8-0 run away from a 3-point game.
Right.
And
third quarters are typically big for Boston.
Yeah. Yeah, so if they win this, okay, Boston did what they're supposed to do, win both of their home games.
Yep.
Go back, Cleveland win game three.
Mm-hmm.
If Boston take game four, that confidence coming back home, we can finish these dudes out.
Yeah, right now?
Right now.
And you have Brad Stevens, that's not going to let you get too high, too down.
Right.
But let's focus at the task at hand. Let's get to the finals.
This will shut all my game seven talk down, and Boston in five would just be like, wow.
I put it to you like this. This is not a must win for Cleveland, but the two games at home are must wins.
Yeah.
Regardless if they split in Boston or not,
right.
They have to win both games. They got to win both games at home. They can't lose.
I somewhat like my mind is telling you guys that you're right, and I could and I'm playing it out in my head, and I can kind of see it going two ways. Right, I can see it being LeBron. Yeah, I'm not going to let you guys beat me. I'm going to somehow find a way to win three straight. Or LeBron be like, I'm not coming back to Cleveland. I'm going to give it somewhat my all and make it look good maybe in the stat sheet or whatever. But I could see him packing it in and saying, all right, y'all got it. And you know, going home and saying, picking his spot, Houston, Philly, or L.A. I don't think he's going to L.A., but you know what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, because I honestly believe, I mean, I know as a competitor you're still going to play, but LeBron has to see his Golden State squad and look at his team and be like, we can't beat them in a seven-game series.
I don't even know if he would somewhat think that. He would think that, you know.
So I wouldn't be surprised if they don't get past Boston in this series.
What's the value in carrying them to the finals? Like, your legacy right now is built on you going to the finals this number of times. This is basically your 6-0, right? This is your Jordan 6-0 record.
If he take this team to the finals?
Just getting to the finals.
Yeah, that many times. You know, people look at it negatively. Like, okay, you've been so many times that you lost. But just the fact that you've been able to go damn near a whole decade.
Bruh. Sniff the finals.
Exactly.
So it's like,
yeah.
Come on.
This is tough. Yeah, this is just the equivalent. It's not the same, but it's close enough for people to make an argument.
Right?
Yeah.
If he goes, it'd be
eight straight. And the only other player that probably has been to more finals, obviously Bill Russell, because he won 11. Magic.
Not consecutively, though. But
not consecutively, obviously. Yeah. But we're just talking overall. Yeah. Jerry West. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think he's been to 7 or 8. You know what I'm saying? So just think about the company that he's in. And Jerry West only won one. Right. And he the logo.
And I know Magic went to 9. Magic
and he's 5-4.
He's 5-4. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So just to me, I think you gotta give him a check in the right box for just making it that amount of times. And then on top of that, how many consecutive times? So basically, you are the conference. Mm-hmm. When you look at it, you're the conference. It goes through you.
Yeah.
Switching gears real quick, I saw a video. I was watching the game, but I don't know how I missed the video where you know how they interview the coaches in between the comeback and quarters.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So they interviewed Steve Kerr. This was yesterday game. Mm-hmm. They interviewed Steve Kerr, and he was asking, like, you know, how you think your team's looking in this first, I think it was either first half or the first quarter. And he was like,
just watching our guys and how talented they are and how talented Houston is, there's no way I could have played in the NBA today. So I came around at the right time 20 years ago.
Here's the thing, man. I think the argument, you know, I think people are always stuck in the past. Oh, my God, it was better back then. The only thing I would say about the NBA that I enjoyed more was the physicality.
But you know, I think we're too soft. I was like, damn, like, because, you know, he was like, I had to put him into reality because he was like, yeah, I don't know. I think the Bad Boys would probably get with the Golden State. And I was like, and that's what I say. I was like, Dad, like, so you're telling me if you warp Kevin Durant back to 1988, they're going to look at Kevin Durant and be like, yo, coach, Chuck, what the hell? Like, what am I going to do with this?
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And I'm like, Dad, you got to realize, like, Kevin Durant was
a generational.
If he warps back to 88, they are going to look at him and be like,
7-foot shooting guard. Because we look at him now, how you guard that?
So imagine back then. Imagine that back then, like. An average height for a shooting guard was 6'3 to 6'5.
Mm-hmm. Jordan was tall for a shooting guard.
For a shooting guard. And he was 6'6. So, yeah, man, I try to tell people, man, like, I was like, nah, Dad, just.
Yeah, I don't know why people, you know, are always, oh, back then was better. The only thing that was better was the level of physicality because you can literally bump, you know, you like.
Hand check.
Like, I think that adds a level of grit to the game that is missing now. You know what I'm saying? Because now we have flopping. Like back then, when you allow that level of physicality, what's a flop? I'm not calling that. This guy just got elbowed and I didn't call that. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I think we're missing that aspect. But everything else, I'll take this level, this year of basketball, you know, this era of basketball over any era of basketball. You know what I'm saying? The guys are more skillful. Name me one 7-footer back in the 80s that can do half of the stuff that Cat can do, half of the stuff that Joel B can do. Like, we just didn't have that skill. Name me a guy over 6'10 back then that could do what DeMarcus or AD can do. Or, matter of fact, I'll take it to the 90s. Tell me a guy back in the 80s that could do what KG was doing. Didn't happen.
In the 80s.
Well, he was 2000s, but still. You know what I'm saying? Like.
Oh, okay, KG.
KG.
He came in 95.
He came in the 90s. But he wasn't dominant until really the 2000s. Like late 90s, early 2000s, right? So all I'm saying is that these basketball players
today. But we saw
today,
the evolution of what was going to happen with
KG. Oh, of course. Of course. KG was one of those guys that's like, okay, if the NBA goes this route, it's scary. And look at what we have. We have Ben Simmons. We have a 6'10 point guard. You know, we had Dirk that came after KG.
We have Kat. We have Joel. We have Boogie. We got AD. We got so many big Giannis. We got so many big, long, lanky, athletic freaks that just not can use their physicality, but they have agility. They have IQ. They have court vision. They have awareness. I've never seen so many talented. That's why I tell you, man, in a couple years, the NBA is truly going to have to consider expanding. Like, not this draft class is going to be okay, but the one after that, and the one after that, and the one after that is so much talent, Ken. I'm telling you, it's ridiculous.
Somebody in the comment section said, you don't know what you're talking about with that draft class.
Okay.
They said it's supposed to be okay or something like that.
This one?
I think it was this one.
Yeah, no, I said this one's only okay. This one, you want to have a top three pick. But the next two or three drafts, oh, you look, if you're in the top seven, top eight, you're going to get a guy. And I'm talking about a legit guy.
Mm. Yeah, what did you guys think about Draymond last night? He was
on one.
Yeah, he was all over the place,
really,
man.
He really was. I don't know if it was the motion of the series or them just being so ready to play, you know, Houston, or I don't know. Yeah, he did seem he was a little more extra than,
mm-hmm.
than how he normally is. It was odd. It was very odd.
Do you think he should have been kicked out? Or not kicked out, but there were a couple of times he
because did he get a tech?
He had the tech for the push.
So how many techs did he have?
And then afterwards, he continued to behave a little irrationally. He was deserving of a tech a couple of times.
I think B said it when because they finished the Pelicans in five, right?
Yeah.
And Houston finished Utah how many, five or six? Was it five?
It was five.
So two gentlemen sweeps, I think, and obviously the buildup throughout the entire season. Houston got the number one overall mm-hmm. seed, this, that, and the third. I think it was just pretty much an overflow of emotion. You know, because look, we know that Draymond is an emotional basketball player. We know that he wears his emotion on his sleeve. And I think that buildup, that anxiety, that want to play this team, y'all been talking all this, y'all wanted us, oh, you got us. I just think that's what it was. I don't think we'll see Draymond this emotional throughout the rest of the series.
Probably not. I mean, he admitted after the game that he was a little extra. But I just think that as much as I love Draymond, I just think that his behavior on the court was somewhat embarrassing, and I think the refs, I commend them. They did a great job, but I felt that at times they should have pulled Steve Kerr to the side and be like, "Hey, man, I probably should have given him a tech there. You need to talk to him, because the next time I will be forced to give him a tech,
mm-hmm.
And I don't want to. I need this game. You know, we kind of want this game to play out on the court the way it needs to." And to his credit, he did calm down a little bit, and maybe a conversation took place. I don't know, but it would have been nice to see that. And to see Steve Kerr, I know he needs that emotion. He feeds off of it, but he doesn't necessarily need it. Mm-hmm. So I think I would have loved to have seen that take place, but nevertheless, he didn't. The other thing I noticed from that Rockets game is that the Warriors – definitely displayed their championship composure.
Oh yeah,
it was all
business. Yes, it was. They knew what they came in there to do. And you know what? I put it to you like this: Golden State talking to themselves, talking about, "Hey, look, man, Houston, you lucky you only lost by 12. You lucky."
They said that.
Oh no, I'm just.
Oh, okay,
I'm,
okay. Just
if I would, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, the attitude.
The attitude. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That's how it felt. Yep. When I was
lucky.
Watching them, just
lucky,
y'all lucky it was only 12. But guess what? Game two, it might be 30. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Like I think Golden State out of the entire year, even including the playoffs, this is what they wanted. I think the whole time, the whole year,
yeah.
This is what they wanted.
Yeah,
they wanted Houston. Y'all over there talking all that. This is y'all first year. We been here, done that.
Woke up and to sleeping giant.
Exactly.
Man.
We gonna show you what it is. Giant. And I think the biggest thing is that they're healthy right now.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? For the most part,
unbeatable in a 7-game series.
Oh yeah,
can't beat them.
Can't beat them. Look, there's nobody outside of Houston left in these playoffs constructed well enough to try to beat them.
Just carve that championship trophy for them. Just carve it up, 2018.
The only way they don't win is if Steph or KD gets hurt. One of those two guys get hurt.
Major injury.
Well, here's the thing. I think they can win without Draymond, even though Draymond is the key to their success.
He's like the heart, though.
He is. He is, but
they can win without Draymond.
Exactly. Knowing what's coming out the East, they can win without Draymond. I think they can win without Draymond. Mm.
Yeah, I was definitely disappointed in the Rockets, man. Like, you've been talking all that crap, and then you go out and maybe you wanted it a little too much. that's possible, and we'll see how they play in game two.
Is that a gray patch on the right side of Kevin Love's head? I saw it the other day, and I'm like, is that just, angle, the light?
Maybe it's the lighting or something.
I don't know, man. You're getting old. I'm sorry, Ken.
Nah, it's all good. So I'm really, really curious to see.
We watching the game, y'all. Watching the game.
He should have got that.
What are you doing?
He tried to save that. He let that ball go.
Go get that.
It's coming right back to you. Just go out there and stretch out and try to hit it back.
I just want to see. Because I'm really more interested in that series, at least. The first two games.
Really?
Rockets and
over this one?
Yeah.
I'm more interested in this one, mainly because we know what's going to happen in Golden State. We know what's going to happen over there. We know what's going to happen, Ken.
Five.
Well, did Ken pick Houston?
I did. Yeah, you did.
And what? How many games, Ken? What'd you say?
Seven or six?
I can't remember.
I think he went crazy and said six. Like, so you're saying Warriors only winning two games?
Yep.
Yeah,
you was smoking that ooh-wee. He was definitely smoking that ooh-wee. You said, I don't know if you was trying to go for shock value or something, but no, dude. Like, come on. Your basketball, it should be telling you that Warriors is going to win this. Yeah. It might be a sweep, depending on how this game two goes.
Exactly. Look, I was saying Golden State get them by 30. If Golden State get them by 20 plus, it's a wrap. It might be a sweep, dog.
Yeah, it might be a sweep because they're going to take their heart away. Mm-hmm. They're going to go back to Oakland clowning, ready. Yep. I like Jaylen Brown, man. Yep. I like Jaylen.
I do too.
You know you from Marietta.
Yeah.
I do
Marietta,
too.
Georgia.
Yeah,
one
of the guys that I work with say he went to high school somewhere around this area.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
he went to high school around over
that's
here.
What's up?
So let me ask y'all this. How do you think Kyrie feels right now?
He's probably like, oh man, when I get back, it's on. You think he's feeling some type of way?
Yep. But not because of the winning. I'm seeing all of the pundits talk about, Kyrie must feel some type of way because they're winning without him. I think Kyrie feels some type of way because he wanted Cleveland and he's licking his chops and he can't do nothing.
Yeah.
And even though I think that, the way the Celtics are playing right now, I definitely think Cleveland can get got, even though I picked Cleveland in six. I think Kyrie. Even more than the finals, he wanted to give it to Bron.
Yeah.
Like, Bron come out here, hey, pick and roll, get him to switch on me. I'm going to break him down. Yep. I'm going to take him to the rack. I'm going to step back three in his mouth. Like, I think Kyrie really wanted that. And I think that's the reason why he may feel a certain type of way right now.
I think for Kyrie, man, like I was texting you guys, I think he's out of there. I think he's going to want out of there.
You tripping.
Yeah, he has, two years left on his contract, right?
I don't think – why do you think he wants out of there?
No, he don't.
Because the future on this team is clearly Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum.
Yeah, but guess what? That's going to come – it's going to be their team after Kyrie's out of his prime.
No. Next year. If they beat Cleveland and go to the finals, and with the way they play and the way Brad Stevens coach, I like their chances. They play Golden State tough.
Not enough firepower. This is the reason right here, right now, why you can't get rid of Kyrie if you want to beat Golden State, right? Because you need Kyrie to match Steph Curry. Tatum is nice. Tatum is the future. I give you that. But if you want to win right now, you need a guy like Kyrie. Now, if Boston trades Kyrie and they get back a Kawhi Leonard, Anthony Davis, stuff like that, then okay, it is what it is, right? I can see that. You don't need Kyrie if you get one of those guys back.
Mm-hmm.
But as constructed right now, I guarantee you they don't win the championship. They can't beat Golden State. But I tell you this, though. If they had Kyrie right now, they might can beat Golden State. they might can beat Golden State.
I think Ainge may go ahead and move Kyrie because I think he's looking at this team right now, Eastern Conference Finals. We don't know how this series is going to play out, but let's just say they beat LeBron. Mm-hmm. That now it's your conference, you know, mm-hmm. with these young guys, unless LeBron goes to Philly.
Philly, that's
and, one, and mm-hmm. that and that changes the dynamics a little bit, but. All of a sudden, it's your conference. Maybe you keep Kyrie for one more year, but you're not going to keep him for the last year because at that point, Tatum and Brown should be all the way ready.
But here's the thing, though, Ken. Like, why do you want to get rid of talent when you look at the NBA? It's all about an accumulation of talent. Daryl Morey said this offseason it's an arms race. And you got one of the biggest guns in the NBA, at least one of the most clutch guns in the NBA. So why would you get rid of them if you're not going to get equal value in return? That's number one, mm-hmm. right? Because typically you lose trades. But the way Boston is set up right now, they can go get anybody. I was just talking to my brother on the way over here, and I said Boston is set up. Anybody outside of LeBron, they can go get. They can legitimately. Hey, look, man, I'm going to give you two first-round picks, Jaylen Brown and Kyrie. Who is not going to give their main guy for that? That's a hell of a package. So you mean to tell me you giving me a guy that's ready to play now, but he's still young. You giving me Kyrie, one of the best hired clutch guns in the NBA, and two first-round picks? You, whoever you want, who do you want to go get? You can go get. But at the end of the day, Ken, because it is an arms race and they still have all of these picks to add more pieces or to trade or to do whatever the hell they see fit, you keep Kyrie. You keep why
is this his team?
This to me, you know, I watch Chris Broussard and I have to somewhat agree. This is Brad Stevens' team. Kind of sort of how it was Popovich's team, even though it's Tim Duncan's team. We like on the court we knew who it was, even though he was the silent killer, mm-hmm. right? Like we know he was the guy.
Yep.
And I think we know Kyrie's the guy. Right. But we didn't see Popovich at this age coaching in his prime. Popovich was already an older guy once he got at the helm of San Antonio. This is Brad Stevens' team. But it's still Kyrie's team on the court. The offense will go through Kyrie. Kyrie is still the most dynamic offensive player on the Boston Celtics, hands down.
He is. He's always been like one of the most talented players in the NBA. But let's be real. Like, he was a highlight reel. LeBron made him for 3 years. And then now he goes to Boston. We thought that he was ready to take the next step forward. Things were looking great. Boston won 16 in a row. It was all about Kyrie, Kyrie, Kyrie. Kyrie gets hurt. They still winning. And now they're competing, going neck to neck with LeBron.
But you know what, though? Why are we using that in a negative way when all these years in San Antonio, they managed injuries to big stars in crucial moments, and we give all of the credence and all of the props to Popovich. Oh, look how Pop's managing
this. Brad Stevens gets his credit.
But what I'm saying is, why is that a negative toward Kyrie? Just because his squad is playing good, that just means that he picked the right squad to go play for.
I think he picked that team because he tried to be LeBron. LeBron went to Cleveland because he saw that young talent there, and he was like, oh, that's where I want to play. He saw Boston was like, well, no, he was traded to Boston. I take that back. I stand corrected.
He still had a say as to where he wanted to go. This wasn't just, oh, we're just going to trade you wherever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so never mind. I take that back. He was traded to Boston. But, I mean, it was primed for him to be the guy. And
but look, Ken, but that's just where Kyrie is in his career. Wherever he goes, he's gonna be the guy.
He's gonna be the guy. Yes, Ken.
Wherever he goes, he's gonna be the guy.
I don't think he's gonna be the guy anymore. Not next year. He's the marquee name. He's the name you can sell, but I think Jaylen Brown, I'm telling you guys,
Here's the thing, though, Ken. Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum could impact the game in more ways, and they're more versatile than Kyrie, right? Because they have size. Because they have size. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, who is the best scorer on that squad?
Jason Tatum.
Get them. Hey, B, cut off this man mic for me, please. cut that shit off, man.
Oh,
because come on, man. Kyrie, mm-hmm. Ken, there is video footage that you can pull up right now.
Evidence.
Kyrie, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown playing king of the court. And them 6'8 plus guys can't do nothing with Kyrie. Kyrie's boo-booing all over those guys all day. I'm talking about he's scoring like eight, nine.
He's an elite offensive scorer. He's a weapon.
So then why would I make Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Gordon Hayward, Al Horford the number one option on offense? Why? When I got Kyrie.
So, if you got Kyrie, I mean, obviously, if it's late. I think what we've learned this year, at least what I've learned, is that when the game is late, Jason Tatum can be that guy. Jason Tatum can be that closer.
And I get that. And do you understand that a championship team needs to have more than one of those guys? And now you have more than one of those guys in Boston. So why are you trying to usurp Kyrie's position? You got to earn it. Kyrie's earned his position. Kyrie did his 3-5, and now he's a superstar. Jason, you need your 3-5 before you can come over here talking about you the number one offensive threat. You not that guy yet. Okay. No matter what they do this year, you all not right. That guy yet. You still need your 3-5.
All right. If y'all say so, but watch how this thing play out. I'm telling you what's going to happen. There's these damn third quarters, man. These are Boston third quarters. 69-68. I don't know why. It's just Cleveland, man.
You know why the best teams always play better coming out of the break?
Why is that?
Football, basketball. Because great teams have great coaches that know how to make a change. They know how to what's the word I'm looking for? It's not change, but they know how to make adjustments.
They know how to make
those halftime adjustments, and what you saw for the first two quarters is not what you're going to see in this third quarter. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And even if it is what you saw in this third quarter, guess what? We're going to play with more intensity. We're going to play with more focus, and that's what the greatest teams do. And you know, Ken, you know, I can't even take when you talk about Boston all the way wholeheartedly, because I remember midseason this year, you were talking about that this was a lucky team, that this team is XYZ, and they're just getting lucky. This is luck to you, bro? How can you have it both ways? How can they be lucky and good?
You discrediting Brad Stevens?
They throughout the season, I think the luck that they've had would allow them.
What's the luck?
Yeah, what's lucky?
They hit a lot of game-winning shots late in the quarter.
They did that with a completely different roster the year before, Ken. So what's the constant?
Now, I give Brad Stevens his props, and I think because of the luck that they've had throughout the season.
Oh, my God. You need a better adjective.
They've gained confidence, and they feel like they are on a championship
luck?
Team.
You lose one of your like, starting small forwards the beginning of the year.
Ken, that's not luck. That's great game plan. That's a great chess move, man.
Right.
Brad Stevens out here playing chess and checkers.
With two of his supposedly best players out with injury.
That's not luck.
That ain't luck. That's bad luck if you ask me. Damn near, and they still winning.
See, and that's what I'm saying. Like we never said what Popovich did was luck. Ooh.
Rozier.
I thought he was going jelly fan, but he jammed that thing.
Damn, him and Mitchell. Yeah,
see, this is where Tyronn Lue falls so freaking short. Like in terms of a coach, you know, it's like now what's going to have to happen if they win this game? LeBron to the rescue.
Like FIFO said, they're going to have to win.
Look how hard. Look games. How much harder they play. But and a part of that is because they're young. They and like Jaylen Brown said it. We're just too young to care. So, and they're playing with more. Look, they want it. They want it. And to beat the man, you got to beat the man. You know, so you got to come at the king.
So let me ask you this, though, Ken. We've seen debacles late with the best up-and-coming team, Philly. Why is Boston not having those same debacles? Now, granted, they have they probably have more veterans that have played in Horford, bigger moments, right? Marcus Morris.
J.R. Smith is 0-6.
This dude.
I'm sorry.
No, you good. But, you know, Philly had veterans. They had Bellinelli. Bellinelli played in San Antonio. So he's been through a stretch run. They had Ilyasova. Obviously, Ilyasova, you know, first, second round, that's it. You know, he's never been part of a stretch run. But they have veterans there, right? So tell me, what's the difference?
I think having Kyrie, because
but Kyrie not playing right now.
But Kyrie is a stabilizing force. Kyrie is a champion.
I understand that.
So Kyrie has insight into LeBron's mind.
So is Brett Brown. Brett Brown won multiple championships over there in San Antonio under Greg Pop.
But Kyrie is able to sit them down like they want it, right? But Kyrie is able to sit them down because he's been in the war room with LeBron. He knows LeBron's mentality in this game, and he knows what he's going to come out with. So he's able to sit down there and basically just you know, give them the game on how things are going to go. So and be able to, along with Horford, kind of stabilize them and get them prepared to compete and to prepare to withstand what we just saw in the first quarter when LeBron put up 23. You know, so no, 21. When he put up 21, and now he has 32, so he's only scored 11 since then. And I'll give the supporting cast credit to a certain point. They've managed to find their offense, so it hasn't been completely LeBron-centric. But in the fourth quarter, it's going to have to be all LeBron right now. So,
But isn't that what we want? Isn't that what the greatest player is supposed to do? Like, isn't that what we measure Jordan upon and everybody else that's supposed to be on this mantle, right? Like, oh, he's supposed to take over. He's supposed to score the points. He's supposed to get the defensive stops. He's supposed to do that. When you're the greatest, that's what you're supposed to do. And LeBron hasn't been in a situation. The closest was Miami. But LeBron hasn't been in a situation where he has another guy at his level. You know what I'm saying? The next closest after Miami was Cleveland, you know, when it came back down 3-1, right? Kyrie was offensively as great as any player that LeBron has ever played with, including prime D-Wade. You know what I'm saying? And I know when I told you that, you almost had a conniption a couple years ago, but it is what it is, right? LeBron has not had a coach on his level. He hasn't had an entire roster that is built really for LeBron. LeBron's skill set built around LeBron. It was always hodgepodge together. Like that big three in Miami, that was hodgepodge. You talking about everybody else was on minimum contracts. Like, that's hodgepodge. You know, you look at Cleveland, 16. You know what I'm saying? I feel that they could have still signed Kevin Love in the offseason. They didn't have to let Andrew Wiggins. Look, either way, at the end of the day, LeBron is supposed to do what great players are supposed to do, and that's supposed to be dominating the fourth quarter. That's what he's supposed to do.
And he will, but I think, you know, as we've talked about with him and this Cavs team is always the others. And here's something that, you know, B and I was kind of talking, you know, beforehand. It's like when I look at this team, man, I talent for talent, I don't think this team is as bad as people portray it to be. I really don't. I think these guys have talent. I think
Whoa. Because if you're already going to be disrespecting Kyrie, you're going to have to show me your cards, Ken. We take out LeBron from the Cleveland roster.
Okay.
We take out Kyrie because Kyrie is the best player on that squad, right? If we look at every other player going down the list on both sides, who has more talent?
I think Cleveland can match them.
Ken, first of all, you're not going to be disrespectful over here at this table right now talking about that Jason Tatum is better than Kyrie Irving, and you're going to say Kevin Love is better than Jason Tatum. There's no way you're going to say that.
I think Kevin Love can get with Jason Tatum in terms of talent, yeah.
Whoa, so then what you're essentially saying is that K-Love is better than Kyrie.
No, we took Kyrie and LeBron James out.
But your statement said that Jason Tatum is better than Kyrie Irving right now.
Yep. I did say that. Did I?
I'm not the only person in the room now.
You said that, man.
I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. So maybe you did, maybe you didn't. But at the end of the day, you're saying
Kevin Love is better than
Kyrie too. That's what you're saying. If Kevin Love is better than Jason Tatum, Kevin Love is better than Kyrie based off of your analysis.
If Kevin Love is better than Jason Tatum, I thought we were looking at – we set Kyrie
I understand
aside.
That. No, I understand that. But we're stuck with the rest of the roster. But Ken, before we even went to this, right, and this is why I said I need to see all your cards on the table, you said Jason Tatum is the guy for Boston and he is better than Kyrie.
Okay.
Right now you say he's better than Kyrie.
When did I say that? I said Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown going to be – oh, look at this shit. They're going to be the man next year.
Okay. That's cool. I'll let you off the hook. It is what it is. But top to bottom, fine.
Bad shot.
If they're falling apart. If we put K-Love over Jason Tatum, okay, that's cool. Who on Cleveland is better than Jaylen Brown? Who on Cleveland?
J.R. Smith.
Get the – Ken!
On, he just saying.
J.R. Smith can ball, man.
0-6. Shut up. Who's better than Al Horford? Don't tell me no Tristan. Don't tell me no Tristan. Who better than Jalen, Ken?
Jeff Green.
Okay. No, he just, hey, he's reaching, hey, yeah, he's reaching. He reaching, I'm going to just watch the game, y'all. Ken doesn't turn me off.
The draft lottery. Draft lottery.
Okay. What's
draft
up?
Lottery, draft lottery. Okay, so if you don't know and you're listening to this podcast, ooh, right now, the draft lottery.
K-Love ready.
I'm going to start from 14 because I'm just going all of the lottery picks. Denver Nuggets got the 14th pick. Clippers got the 12th and 13th. Charlotte Hornets got the 11th. Philadelphia got 10. New York Knicks got 9. Cleveland Cavaliers, 8. Chicago Bulls, 7. Orlando, 6. Dallas got the 5th pick. Memphis, 4th. Atlanta Hawks, 3rd.
Yes.
Sacramento, 2nd pick. And the first pick, team with the first pick goes to Phoenix Suns.
First time ever for Phoenix.
Yeah, it is first time ever.
In their franchise history. First time ever.
Good. Thanks for that info, FIFO. Yeah, so,
man, you know, man, the draft is my thing, man. Right. I love summertime basketball.
So I was thinking like who's gonna get draft what, and my boy Meech was he texted me and said that Phoenix might go. It's a possibility they might go with my man from Arizona because it'd be Devin Booker, Josh Jackson, and my man from
DeAndre Ayton.
Yeah, coming out going to Phoenix like that's you know nice, what.
They could possibly go there. They could also do Luka Doncic.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Because their head, Phoenix's head coach is the first head coach, and I may be wrong. I may be wrong. Can you fact check for me while you got the big old thing out there? But Phoenix Suns head coach, I can't even say his last name, but he's the first head coach ever born outside of the U.S. Like, not born in North America.
Gotcha.
And I'm not sure if he's the head coach or he's an assistant coach, but I know Phoenix has a new regime coming in. Obviously, they got rid of Earl Watson. But with all that being said, I think Luka Doncic could be in play as well as the number one overall pick for Phoenix, which, you know, they kind of need a point guard, and he's a point guard. Well, he's really a combo guard with size. So I think that could work. I think DeAndre Ayton works because obviously they already have their young stud and Devin Booker, right? And then you kind of build off of that. And I always say when you got a dynamic guard, you need a big man. Yep. You just need that. And
so what am I looking for?
Phoenix Suns' new head coach.
Oh, okay. It is – I just had his name. Igor Kokoski.
That's what I'm saying. So that's what I'm saying. I think Luka Doncic could be in play for the number one pick for Phoenix because you're talking about 6'7", 6'8" guard. You
know, is he really that good?
From the highlights I've seen, yes. But again, you know, like when you're looking at those European highlights,
yeah, it's like
the other guys that they're going exactly.
Not, I mean, it's good talent, but it's not.
It's not like NBA.
NBA, like,
you know what
like,
I'm saying? You know. So it's a little hard to really say what he can do against top tier athletes.
They got him going to Sacramento as far as
like number two.
Yep,
number two. Well, hey, you know, going to Sacramento, that's nice too. Pairing him next to De'Aaron Fox, you know what I'm saying? Because De'Aaron is super quick.
You're straight at your backcourt.
Exactly. You're straight at your backcourt.
Good. At that Boom. Point, you just got to work on your forwards.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly.
And they got Marvin Bagley going to the Hawks.
See, see, here's the thing. Like, I could see Marvin Bagley going to Phoenix because you talking about a legit 6'10 guy that can, you know, offense, defense. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Obviously, that's what they kind of got Josh Jackson for. So I don't know, you know, what's going to be his future if they draft Marvin Bagley.
Like 6'7", 6'8", though. I mean, Marvin Bagley, like,
he is. Yeah, he is.
They can play different.
They can. It's just that Josh Jackson is supposed to be that wing guy. You know what I'm saying? You just put him out there. He can play big. He can play, you know, kind of like the Draymond. Yep. You know what I'm saying? That's kind of why they got him. Okay. You know what I'm saying? And I think Marvin Bagley can be a different version of that. So, you know, you're kind of doubling up. So I don't know. But for the Hawks, let's talk about the hometown, man. Because honestly, you know, and I've been going back and forth with the homie. There's only two ways that you compete with for a championship. You build it or you buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And the Hawks have been in playoff What's the P word when between heaven and hell?
Oh, you so.
What's the damn word?
Ken. What's the P word between heaven and hell?
Y'all know what the hell I'm talking about. Yeah. But anyway, purgatory.
Purgatory.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? They've been in playoff purgatory, the Hawks, for the last couple years. Yeah. Because you don't ever want to be good enough just to make it and not really compete, because then you're not going to be able to drive top talent. Right. You know what I'm saying? And then the longer you go on that stretch and you have young talent that you drafted, then eventually you got to pay them, which then you can't sign a free agent.
Right.
And that's where the Hawks have been in. Right. But now when we see that they have John Collins, which is a nice piece, I'm not saying that he's the guy, but he's a guy.
He's a guy, right?
Dennis Schroeder, they already had to pay him, but they didn't pay him a lot. And he's a guy, right? I love Torian Prince. He's a guy. This draft will allow you to draft the guy. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So and you have a top three pick. Exactly. Top three pick. So now you
some studs coming out. Exactly. Draft around
it. Exactly. So you can go get a Marvin Bagley. You can go get a Luka Doncic. You can go get a DeAndre Ayton. Mm-hmm. Or you can go get Porter.
Obama.
No, what's Porter? What's his first
Michael
name?
Porter. Michael Porter. From Missouri.
From Missouri.
Yeah, I like him.
You know what
I'm
saying? Now when you look at Torian Prince.
They got him going to the Bulls.
At number seven? Oh, that's big time.
Yeah.
Hey, I put it to you like this. The Bulls get him.
Because they got my man last year.
Laurie Markkanen.
Yes.
Laurie's a baller.
He just
need physicality.
He's just too small
right now.
Yeah.
Right? And I think he's like 19, 20. So he's in the next 3 to 5. He's gonna be nice. Yeah. We already saw Zach LaVine got his bounce back.
Yep.
So this is the year that he's really gonna be the leader of that squad. Ooh. They got Chris Dunn, right? Which he's been a little bit underwhelming, but at the end of the day, still young talent, right? We gotta be excited. And you add a Michael Porter to that, and they had got Denzel Valentine, which I think is going to be a good backup, wing guy.
Yep.
They got Bobby Port. They got guys now.
Yeah, they got guys.
You know what I'm saying?
You just got to be patient. You got to be patient.
And you got to make the right draft pick.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's where the Bulls were, right? Like, they were in playoff purgatory. Mm-hmm. Jimmy by himself was not enough. Added D. Wade, still not enough. You know what I'm saying? I know Mirotic was a drafting stash a couple years ago. He was nice, but he wasn't enough to get you over the hump.
Right.
Now you have a young nucleus that you can build, and when the time is right, you could either trade some assets, or hopefully you can attract a free agent. You know what I'm saying? To get them over the hump, or maybe you just those guys developed so much where you don't need none of that. Mm-hmm. You got your guys now.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, you either gotta buy or build it. And where the Hawks are right now, they're in obviously rebuild mode.
Obviously, let go of the coach, let go of the host,
everything. And where they are right now, man, I like it, because you know what? It's progress. You can't go lower than where the Hawks were. You know what I'm saying? And here's the thing. The other thing I like about the Hawks is, regardless of whoever they get, they're not going to be transformative enough to get the Hawks into the playoffs. So guess what? They're going to get another good pick next year. So now you got the number 3 pick this year, and hopefully another top 5 pick next year.
It'll be a 25-win team.
Exactly.
Get a top pick, and then just...
And then after that top pick after that year, then boom. Now we got the traction rolling.
Yep.
Now we can compete with the Phillies, the Bostons, the possibly the Chicagos if they develop. You know what I'm saying? Now we're back in the fold. You know, and that's why I always say, and I criticize GMs on this podcast so much, pull the trigger, Toronto. Let all that go. You already let the coach go. Get draft picks.
Yep, get draft picks and get whatever other pieces you want to get while the getting is good with DeMarcus Rosen and
exactly.
Kyler. Don't wait. Don't hold on to him too long.
Exactly.
Because if you hold on to him too long, they're gonna be like,
You know what, B? I think that if they go into the season the same way as they were constructed this year, then it's too late.
It's
too late.
You got to give the good. Once that July 1st free agency and trade, once that day come, Toronto, said, pull that trigger.
You got to pull the trigger.
You got to let him go.
Reset.
Yeah, reset. Look, you know, teams should be hiding that Toronto. Like, look, how much, what you want for DeMarcus Rosen? He can be an asset to our team. We give you some draft picks, whatever, give you some good bench players or whatever, whatever you want.
Yep.
And then another, what you think about my man from Villanova, Mikael Bridges going to Philadelphia, possibly, at the 10th spot.
That's the guard, right?
Yeah, shooting guard, small forward type of guy.
Going to
Philly.
I think at this point, because Philly has pretty much what they need, it don't matter what they draft anymore. You know what I'm saying? It really don't matter what they get. Because at this point, all they need is just more. And that's more shooting, more defense. You know what I'm saying? So because you have your stars, it makes everything easier, right? Like, because now you don't have to be like, okay, you're trying to project this guy's going to be a superstar. This guy's going to be an all-star. You have that. And think about the one player that was the number one pick that we ain't even talking about. Markel.
Yeah.
So if Markel develops at all next year, you're just adding to what they already had. Mm-hmm. So whatever you draft, it really don't matter for Philly no more.
Let me ask this. You think at number nine, you think Mark Fizdale would be a good coach for Trae Young if he falls to the Knicks?
Yes. So I think the Trae Young thing is gonna be very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you can shoot like that, you could play in the NBA. I don't care how big, small, what you could shoot, you could play in the NBA.
He's kind of like a pass first point guard too, though.
He is. He wants to.
You know,
pass
it's not
first.
Like yeah, it's not like he's just, you know.
Yeah, like trying to jack up 30 shots. He's not Russell. Yeah, you know, he's not trying to get 30 shots.
Yeah, he can pass that rock.
He can.
Yeah.
So again, what does New York have right now? Who's their best player? 7'6"
Sam Hardaway Jr.
No, come on,
is he still over there?
He is.
Porzingis.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Why am I forgetting about
Porzingis?
3'6"
Lafayette.
I forgot about Porzingis. I can't be off.
Exactly.
Him.
So
yeah.
So if Porzingis is your best guy, and obviously you're drafting top 10 again, and we all kind of, you know, the consensus is Frank, whatever his name is, the French guy,
yeah,
the French point guard. He's not, you know, NBA guy.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got to go get you another guard. Like, they went and got Tim Hardaway. Right, and he struggled at first. Right, this is the type of organization they are.
Second half of that season, though.
How do you draft him? Allow him to go to Atlanta, and then trade? Like, what is you doing?
Right,
what is you?
Right.
But either way, that's neither here nor there. I think that Trae Young does fit them. You know, Fizdale came out early and said, "I can't have no punks on this team. I need Rough Riders." You know what I'm saying? I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but I think Trae Young fits that mold. I think Trae Young, because, you know, he's getting some of that criticism. I think Trae Young plays with a chip on his shoulder. And I think that when you pair him up with a guy like a Porzingis, that's only going to expand his game. I think in he played at Ohio State, right?
Oklahoma.
I know it's a red and white team. But at Oklahoma, when he was making those passes and stuff, who was trying to finish that? You know what I'm saying? Like it. Sometimes as a point guard, you're only as good as your teammates.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It doesn't matter how many people I break down and I give the craziest no-look pass. You don't hit the shot, what was it? It's nothing. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So I think that New York has the foundational piece that can help Trae Young progress in his NBA career. So I think that would be a good pick.
Hmm. Ken, what you looking at, man?
Oh, just the latest mock draft. They had Doncic going 1-8 and second, and Bagley third to the Hawks, and Jaren Jackson
Bagley,
to the Grizzlies.
Yeah, they got Bagley going to the Hawks. Man,
I don't know if I like DeAndre Ayton in Sacramento. I gotta process that.
I don't know, like what's going on with Sacramento? Like, what type of organization?
Vivek Ranadive.
Look at this. That's 40 to 22 in the second half.
That's the only person they should get.
Well, no. Vivek is the owner. I think he's the problem, and I think the second problem with Sacramento is Vlade. I like Vlade as a player. I like him as a personality and a character, but as a GM, I don't know.
You're down 11, and you still got LeBron and Kevin Love on the bench.
Okay, Ken. So this is one of those moments.
I gotta move. I gotta see this game.
Here's the thing, right? I think that this is one of those moments that coaches either get praised or crucified for. And
it's not working, people.
But
they're losing the lead, by the way.
Look, at the end of the day, what was that?
As you were saying.
At the end of the day, sometimes you gotta try something different. And Ty Lue is going to a lineup that doesn't include either one of his all-stars. So I think what he's trying to do now is obviously buy time for his guys, but also try to get some confidence out of his other guys.
Clarkson need it for sure. Lance need it.
Is it me or Kyrie look like he heavy?
He got like a coat. Is that like a coat on, a jacket on or something?
Yeah, and I'm talking about in the face. He just looks like he added some pounds.
18.
Probably so. He ain't been like working
18
out.
18 and 10 without Kyrie since he went down. Including the playoffs, 8-0 at home, about to be 9-0. I think, you know what I said on Twitter, that this is a Larry Nance series, and the reason why I say that, because I think they need his speed, his athleticism, you know, his overall raw talent, and he has to be able to match some of the things that Boston is able to do with their mm-hmm. youthfulness and versatility. Same thing with Clarkson. Clarkson is their version of Eric Gordon right now. But they need him. They need him badly. Like, he has to find his shot. And I don't know. He was the S factor. I thought he was going to be the difference maker for this team. Now that I think they got LeBron back in.
Yeah, LeBron is back.
But the reason why I said this was bad for Lou is like, you need to win. You need to try your best to win this game. And I know a lot of the conversation tomorrow will be LeBron put up 21 and only had 11 the rest of the game. You know, and people are going to probably talk about that hit. But, look, man, like, I don't understand how we look at LeBron, and you kind of alluded to this a while ago. We look at LeBron and we want him and expect him to do, like, everything, to be the guy. But then we praise other teams for guys that when they have help and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, when you look at Golden State, when you look at Houston, when they're able to, you know, when their guys play well. When you look at Boston and their guys are playing well and their guys are hitting shots. And nobody's looking for a hero there. But we expect LeBron to be a hero every single time. And it's a little bit unfair, I think, to him.
It is. It has been. And that's why I don't think LeBron, for the most part, gets a fair shake. You know, we have pundits call him not clutch. Like, what are we talking about?
Well, that's
all. That's not us.
Yeah,
but I'm just saying. And have you heard the latest? Well, there's a difference between taking a clutch shot when the game is tied versus when you're down. Like, look, man, you hit the shot to win the game. It don't matter.
Yeah, that's all.
Don't matter.
Yeah, but. You know, I know people are going to look at, well, LeBron only had 11 points. Well
you expect them to score 21 per quarter?
Right. And what's wrong with that? Like, you expect other guys to play well.
Of course.
You know, and that's the thing.
It's a team
and I know
sport.
That's one of the things Chris Carter has been harping on, you know, for the longest, is that he doesn't trust anybody else. And one of the things that I was pointing out, and maybe I need to recant my statement as far as, you know, Cleveland being able to roster, you know, player for player and matching Boston. Okay. But what I really meant to say was that I don't think the guys that they have with a good coach can get production out of those guys. Clarkson has some talent. Larry Nance has some talent. Rodney Hood has some talent. Jeff Green has some talent. Kyle Korver has some talent. These guys are not scrubs, and I think that's an unfair narrative that they have put on them for some time, because when they first got these guys, well, you know, we were like, oh, LeBron finally got some players. Now, all of a sudden, look at this crap. They're over-hustling. They're just playing harder, man. Look at that's what I'm saying. Look. LeBron get the ball. LeBron get the damn ball, and then they just overworking him, man. Look at this shit.
How is overworking luck? You outwork someone.
Yeah, good way not to call that. Because typically they be calling stuff when players fall.
Of course he's not going to knock it down.
That's a good defense.
That's a good defense and a way to get aggressive.
But you know what, man? But I think maybe there should have been Korver. It looked like Korver was open in the corner. But yeah, you're right. You knock that down. It's a 5-point game. Then it's within striking distance for LeBron to potentially close it out. But all I'm saying is that I think that And I think those guys hear that. And I think because they're, you know, people are saying this is the worst roster he's had since 2007. That 2017 was bad.
No, no, it was. But here's the thing, though. I think that this roster has more talent, but their production is 2007.
You see what I'm saying? Right, right. So that's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's more talent, but they producing like it was 07.
And that's when I look at a guy like Tyronn Lue. Like, I think if you switch LeBron, like Tyronn Lue and Brad Stevens, can you imagine what he would do with LeBron and these guys?
Of course, because Brad Stevens has a system. How many times do I talk about that? That, like, to be a great squad, a championship squad, forget a great squad. If you want to be a championship contender, you have to have an identity. And that identity comes from the head coach.
Look at this. Look at the pressure.
Look at that. That's crazy, dude. That's not look.
But you know what?
Oh, too much.
But you know what? That's not conceding the inbounds pass. And that's that. So that's something else I don't see Cleveland doing. They're not in anyone's face when they don't have the ball. They play off the ball a lot. He's off.
He was on, though.
He was on.
You got to keep shooting.
Yeah, I mean, he'll shoot himself into it. But I think now this is where and so now it's like, okay, LeBron, do you rescue the team? 7-4
left to go in the fourth quarter.
Do you rescue the team or what do you do here, right? Because they've gotten a lot of stops. This was a chance for them to really come back to the game. And this is, I mean, if you look at it, if they hit these shots, then they're back in it. But then you also look at it and say, hey, you know, if LeBron – go ahead and does what he does, then, you know, they're back in it. So it can go both ways. And I think it's like, what do you want to do? Do we want LeBron to do everything or do we want LeBron to have help?
Well, here's the thing.
LeBron out of here. LeBron getting out of Cleveland after this year.
Yeah, he going to Philly, man. You know, look.
Did you say Philly?
Yeah, he going to Philly. He going to Philly. He going to Philly. I doubt that Philly is able to get Kawhi. But I definitely think LeBron is going to Philly, man. And how many times have I been wrong with free agent destinations and stuff like that? I called it midseason when I told y'all KD was going to go to Golden State. I told y'all that. Look, I'm telling you, LeBron is going to Philly. If you look at every scenario, right, Houston, it don't work. Why? Mm. Because they run pick and roll, and you already got two ball-dominant guards.
Yep.
What? So LeBron is going to be a catch and shooter? Hell no.
But LeBron did say he wanted to play
off the ball. Like off LeBron. The ball don't mean catch and shoot.
No, I know that. I'm just saying, but, like, you know, he don't have to.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you know, set up the offense and all of that. So what does that leave you? Philly. And I think that he can be a tremendous aid to Ben Simmons. I think Ben Simmons might average a triple-double with LeBron on the squad. Because if you look at, you know, what was his career? Or what was this season? He was like 16-7-7, 16-8-8.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? You mean to tell me he not going to get 2-3 more assists passing it to LeBron? He gonna get them assists. He going to get them full course D-Wade passes. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And vice versa, LeBron too. So I think that's what – I think that's –
Oh, my God. Brick, man, he ain't hit no rim on that one.
Man, he ain't caught no foul
this
on that.
This game over.
It is.
I mean, it's it is. Still a lot of
no. It. You know why it's over, B? Because you're a basketball player and you see the level of execution and focus right now.
Yep.
What is Boston getting?
Boston
is getting passes to the front of the rim.
Yep.
And Cleveland is.
Good pass.
Oh, he traveled.
He did. Did they call it?
No, they didn't.
But yeah, they're taking a lot of jump shots, and they're trying to shoot themselves with these three pointers.
Exactly.
Back into the game.
I don't know. You know, I do it at times. You know, when I play in these leagues and stuff. Sometimes when you're down like 10, 11, you know, you want to hit these threes, and it feels like, you know, that 1-3 is gonna make up the entire deficit, and that's how Cleveland is playing right now. Like, there's not an 11-point shot. You gotta play good offense. Look at that hustle. That boy long, boy. You see that?
Yes.
That boy long.
Outworking. They don't got nothing to do with luck, Ken.
Nope.
They getting outworked.
No, that was definitely, yeah. That's like I said, they're young, man.
Yo, this LeBron to K-Love Alley thing, where did this come from?
I have no idea.
I thought it was Lance for a second.
But they got to be able to execute in the half court, and I think that's where they're running into a lot of their problems. As a matter of fact, even in transition, they've been poor in transition too. But Lou, man, it's like it's just sometimes it's hard to watch to see like the mistakes. Like when I watch the Cavs and I see other teams like Boston play, or when I see Golden State play, and you know when the Rockets are rolling, sometimes the Rockets, I just wonder, dang. Like, look at that. Nobody. He got his own rebound.
Like, get big.
And people are just standing there. Mm-hmm. Damn, B, you might be right, man.
Might.
You might be right, dog.
Man, I am right. What are you talking about? I'm always right.
Cleveland going to take a jumper. Oh, guess not.
He can do that all game, but he doesn't want to do that all game. That's a lot of work.
That is a lot of work. Because think about everything else he has to do. Like, right. And in addition, you want me to go against these big bodies that are my size?
Remember what I told y'all at the beginning of these
playoffs? That was offensive.
I said LeBron going to be exhausted, man. I told y'all. I was like, if he gets to the finals, Bron is going to be exhausted because he has to do too much in order for teams to even be in the game, let alone win the game.
Win the game, so, exactly.
Yeah, man. It's
right. Just, and look, they still comparing the 21 to the first quarter. Yep. It's like – He's still going to get 40.
Yeah.
And 20 of that happened in the first half. Like, mm-hmm. other guys have to execute, they have to take care of the ball, and they got to play hard. And I'm not seeing them at least play hard.
And then you know what? This is why LeBron can't win or lose. He comes out at the beginning of the game, and he's trying to get his guys involved, and then they go down, and then he has to become Superman. Oh, well, LeBron needs to be more aggressive. LeBron right. scored 21 points in the first quarter. Then they're still down. Oh, LeBron need a pass. Hey, man. Hey, what you want LeBron to do now? Like, ooh, good pass. He can't do it all. You got to pick and choose what he needs. Oh, got him. That's what he wanted the whole way.
Yeah. But you know, every time I look up, it seems like somebody for Boston is open.
It's that system.
Yeah. Still shooting that jumper. Uh-oh, there you go. I don't know. Hey, it's close. You know what?
That's a genius timeout right there.
My breast. That is.
That's very, like, wait. Hold on. This is LeBron James here. We talking about now.
Yep. 6-point
yep.
game.
Yep.
Yep. That's a great timeout great by timeout. Brad Stevens. Great.
Because that's great defense. It's just better offense. That's great defense.
Damn, that was a good timeout.
But see, mm-hmm. this is where, like, it's within six. And, you Four know, now it's like, yeah. So now we're like, okay.
This clutch time, ain't it?
This is where you're supposed to take over and win the game.
Exactly. Yep. Now, let me ask. Yep. Now, let me ask. Because, you know, look, I'm a basketball player. I still play. I'm still young enough to play. Was that a clutch shot by LeBron? This is not game winner. This is not the last 2 minutes. Is that not a clutch shot for LeBron?
Clutch shot don't necessarily have to mean it's being 3-2-1, bam. Mm-hmm. A clutch shot can be a shot that changed momentum of
timely,
game.
Exactly.
Yeah, a timing basket, anything.
There's certain players
clutch
that
can be sometimes a clutch steal, a clutch
exactly.
block, a clutch defensive play.
Exactly. You know? There's just certain players that have a knack to make the big play when the team needs it most. And to me, that's what clutch is, right? And is that not the definition of what LeBron is? Like that jumper right there turns the tide and makes it into a 6-point game. It's literally a 2-possession game now.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? That was a big shot. It was well defended. You know what I'm saying? Like, what else do you want from LeBron?
And I think like 7 points in the quarter now so mm-hmm. far.
So he's starting to get his mojo. And
take over at this point.
And like you said, Ken, he scored a 21 in the first quarter, right? Mm-hmm. He's kind of coasted since, and now he got to turn it up. The man my age, and I know how I feel. You know what I'm saying? So I know that he cannot go full tilt the entire game. He has to be able to pace himself.
And he shouldn't have to.
He shouldn't. Not at this point in his career, he shouldn't have to.
And that's what Wade said. Wade told Stephen A. Smith. He was like, you know, he was like, at this age, at this, in year 15, you don't want to have to do all that.
It's too much.
And that one statement was enough to say he's going to leave because he's having to do too much in his 15th year to win ball games.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, I think when you look at it, has to speak to, you know, his greatness and could check a box in the GOAT conversation. But and I'm going to come back to that in a second. But I want to go back and respond to something B said, where you said, now you got to close it out. And you're right, if they get stops. And I think that's where I'm concerned, mm-hmm. is whether or not
– Cleveland will get stops or not.
Can they get stops? Can they get the 50-50 balls? Will the 50-50 balls bounce their way? Will, you know, and if they get those stops and they get like three stops in a row, can LeBron – now we're talking. Can he hit two threes or can he hit, you know, three baskets in a row? Or can he hit one and assist on two others? Can they tie the ball game? But it comes down to coaching and being able to get stops on the other end. If they don't get those stops, LeBron can't close. But what happens is that people will look at that and be like, well, it was 6 minutes within left in the game. I mean, they were within 6 points, and LeBron had a chance to close it out, and he didn't close the game. Well, what happens since then matters. And sometimes, you know, those points are being left out of the conversation.
So let's look at these numbers. LeBron, 40 points. Kevin Love, 22. He's shooting 50%. Those are pretty good numbers for their two stars, right? And they're
trapping,
still down.
Trapping, you got them.
And they're still down. What does that say when we can all agree that Boston does not have the same level of talent as Golden State? So it doesn't matter if LeBron scored 40, 50 points. Doesn't matter if K-Love scored 25, 30 points. It don't matter, Ken.
No, it doesn't. And we're going to look at that.
What
and we're going to look at.
They called a foul on Cleveland, I believe.
They said, James, ooh, that. See, these are the calls that I really, really cannot tolerate. So there's another. Look at that, B. Like, that.
That's that softness I'll be talking about. That right there. Back in the 80s and 90s when I was watching basketball, that's not a foul.
No, that's not a foul. I don't know. Those tickets, but see, and that allows them to stabilize the game now. Mm-hmm. So now they get a chance to go up 8 instead of a turnover, mm-hmm. and it possibly being a 4-point game. So those plays matter.
They're big.
And yeah, and it's but it goes back to what I was just telling B a few minutes ago. Can you get a stop? And for the most part, they did everything they needed to do. They trapped in the corner. Boston was panicking, and the refs, you know, called what they thought was a foul call. And why wasn't that a call?
Because that's all JR flailing. That's all that is, Ken.
But I'm just – I don't know.
You know what, Lula? I think that possession right there shows the difference between Brad Stevens and Ty Lue.
Yes.
Ty Lue ran a play
and look.
For LeBron that only has one option, LeBron. When Brad Stevens and the greatest coaches of that we've watched, when they run plays, guess what? There's five options. You understand me? Like, yes, right. This is where we want to go. But we can get any option we want because right. That's how it's designed.
I think that might be a flagrant too on
JR. But like I said, what were we just talking about? You can't get a stop.
Yeah, look at the obvious. That's yeah, that's
oh, that's a flagrant.
Yeah,
come
that's
on,
a,
JR.
That's a flagrant too, possibly, dude.
Yeah, he just pushed him.
He just literally he didn't make a play for the ball or nothing. He just straight. Literally just pushed him. Yeah, that's the way to have your teams back. That's what's up. I think Jared might get. I wouldn't be surprised if he get ejected.
Remember what I just said. It.
He
4-point, 6-point game.
Right.
Is within striking distance.
Right.
But you can't
two
execute.
Bonehead plays.
Yes.
You do a stupid three and then a crazy foul.
And ball game. Not only that, now it's a flagrant. Two shots in the ball. Right. He's probably going to get ejected.
Right.
And, you know, now you're going back to.
That was a stupid
foul. It was a stupid foul, but it wasn't. I wouldn't say it was aggressive.
It'd be different if he was, like, jumped up and kind of push him at the same time to make it look like he was going for the ball, but really his intention was to push him. But you just clearly, that's damn near almost as bad as someone undercutting you, dude. It's like
almost.
Yeah, I said almost. He just clearly pushed
you know what though?
He jumped up. He's defenseless.
I think a play like this, just because of the extracurricular activity after the play, I think that this is the type of play that can jumpstart J.R. Smith.
I don't know. I don't think he got that mentality, man. Mm.
No, I think J.R. is an emotional player. You know, I feel you, B. But he's also kind of an emotional player. So at least sometimes I think that matters. And sometimes they go on the court and it doesn't turn into much about nothing. They don't get, excuse me, they don't get going.
It's a not. Oh yeah, he shouldn't have flagrant. So what they call it, a flagrant? They ain't even pop up on the screen. What they called him for?
Nah, I gotta be flagrant. Flagrant one, two shots in the ball, side out.
Man, this is crazy. So LeBron be down.
0-2. You know what they're gonna ask him at the press conference? Are you concerned? What's your level of concern? What's your level of concern, LeBron?
I don't think he'll be concerned.
Because Boston did what they supposed to do. Win on their home court. Now, I would be concerned if y'all lose game three and go down 0-3. Then that can raise some level of concern. Because at that point, that confidence of Boston is like, let's get
it's over
of,
in Cleveland.
It's over, yeah. But if, you know, LeBron ain't
concerned. Ooh.
Good spin. And get the foul. And one. Wow.
Game.
That's game right there. That you sucking the life out of the team at that point.
Because think about how long they've been on this side of the court.
I know, right? That's just draining them. Up by 12, possibly go up by 13. It's a wrap.
And because you need offense, Kevin you can't Love have Tristan school. Thompson in the game,
right.
Which puts Kevin Love on him, and Kevin Love stands no chance.
Yep. Getting done in. See if you're going to break it up to 13.
He is 80%.
So let me ask you guys.
No, he missed it.
Are you concerned?
What? Am I concerned about what?
FIFO.
Because you know who I got to win this series.
They're surviving a 40-piece. Look at this.
Woo-hoo!
Get that out of here. It ain't that. It ain't that, little one. It ain't that. Trust me, that's a block. LeBron has got many a player like that.
He timed that nice, too.
Mm-hmm.
He guarded two players, yo.
Do what Bill Russell say, man. When you block the shot, get the ball.
Block it, yeah. Keep it in bounds, yeah.
Oh, that's game.
He's been off.
He like he was in rhythm and everything.
But
yeah, they survive a 40-piece, like you said. They survive a 40-piece from LeBron.
Mm-hmm. And 20 plus from K-Love.
K-Love, yeah.
That and that's my question. If LeBron scores half of your points, K-Love adds another
20-something,
and you lose.
How do you win? By double digits, too, at that.
62 points.
Right now, it's double digits.
62 out of 89 points. Like, you're supposed to win that game.
Yeah. Because you got to get a smooth 15 from JR. 12 to 15 from JR.
Remember what I said before any one of these series. You need Bron to be Bron.
Yeah.
You need K-Love to show up in 3 to 5 games.
You need like one game from Clarkson. You need like
one game from everybody else. Yeah. And this game was Kyle Korver's game, right?
Yeah, he got off too.
He got off.
He had a good quarter.
It is what it is. This was his game. And Boston withstood that and extended the lead. This is a problem. Oh, wow. And you seen the last couple of possessions, even though Boston gets good shots, how they don't always make them? Mm-hmm. That's the difference between them and Golden State.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
Golden State makes those shots. And that's why even if – I think Boston is the best out of the East prepared to withstand that. But their problem is without Kyrie, they can't match the firepower.
A triple-double, 42, 10, and 12.
Not enough.
And you're losing by 12.
And oh, bang,
losing
bang.
By 12. Oh, they trying to embarrass them.
Trying to win. This is the playoffs. Win or go home. Ain't nobody coming out.
All right, so this game is over. But he is pathetic. Now, I swear to God, they better win because Marcus Smart going to be eating those words.
What did Marcus Smart say? I missed it.
I mean, he's at home. He's just playing to the crowd.
Oh, okay.
He's in a Celtic. He's doing what he's supposed to do. It's no different than, you know, LeBron jumping on the table after hitting the shot in Toronto. So it's the same thing.
Q said, I'm sticking with Bron in six.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
I'm not
changing. Here's the thing.
I think they can get him four times.
Of course. You have LeBron damn James.
Lou worries me.
Let me ask you this. Outside of his system, right, what else is Lou supposed to do?
I think his rotations have been better. Has been, like in this game, I think he blew the game in certain spots. When he had Rodney Hood out there, Larry Nance, and Jordan Clarkson, and neither one has played well. I think it was that time when I was like, "What are you doing?"
But
and okay. I understand what you were saying,
but here's the thing though, Ked. If he doesn't play him, then you being a pundit is gonna say, "Oh, well, he should have played him."
No.
So then what? So if you stick with your guys and your other guys ain't performing, what you supposed to do as a coach, Ked?
I think he could play Larry Nance. I think Larry Nance can play. I think Larry Nance needs to play. Larry Nance needs to get in the rhythm to be able to produce. But I think Chetty can mm-hmm. play. Chetty is producing, will probably produce way better than Jordan Clarkson right now. Yeah. Or even Rodney Hood.
Here's the thing. Rodney Hood and both Jordan Clarkson are better shooters than Chetty.
I know, but so, they're not shooting.
I understand all that. But at the end of the day, you go based off of what your guys' skill sets are. Chetty is more of a, you know, switch on defense, do whatever, you know what I'm saying, you grit and grind type of guy. But he's not going to hit open jumpers. That's supposed to be the game of Rodney Hood. Jordan Clarkson, and you were talking about matchups, right?
Yeah.
Terry Rozier, who, like, if you, just on paper, if you look at who's supposed to be the best matchup for him, it's supposed to be Jordan Clarkson.
Right, yes,
so,
I agree.
So as a coach, you know these things, and he's playing them as much as he possibly can to know if he can play these guys, Ken. So that's what I'm saying. Like, we can't have it both ways with coaches. We can't say, oh, well, you're playing these guys and they ain't playing, and then he don't play. Oh, well, why didn't you play them? This is the best matchup, and these guys are supposed to do X, Y, Z. No, we can't do that. At the end of the day, I think this goes beyond Ty Lue. I think Ty Lue's biggest thing is, what is Cleveland's identity, right? We didn't see that at the beginning of the year with the first squad. What is it with the new squad? And obviously, I'm not going to put that type of pressure on them because it's a brand new squad. I get it. But at the end of the day, by now, there should be an identity. And the only identity is LeBron. What's their identity on defense? What do they try to do? Do they try to protect the 3-point shot? Do they try to protect the paint? What are they trying to do? I can't see it.
They scored 36 points in the second half, and credit to Boston's defense. Now, I don't want to take anything away from Boston at all. They played great defense. They came out prepared and ready to go. Lou obviously didn't have his guys ready to go. J.R. Smith is giving you nothing. But, you know,
you can't put guys not performing on Lou. I you can't do that. That's not fair to him.
Yes, to a certain degree it is. Because
wow, who was that? Because that was not Jason Tatum.
But because I think his inconsistency in playing guys, his erratic minutes in playing guys, matters, because guys need to play to get into a rhythm. Like, I don't even, how many minutes did
Ken
Hood
Ken,
play?
Ken, okay.
Look, Clark,
here's the thing. I think you do have a little bit of a base right there, but on a championship squad, you got to be ready at a moment's notice. Shane Battier was ready. You know what I'm saying? Didn't matter, he ain't played all five games or all six games. Game seven came, he was ready to go. And obviously these guys are young and they haven't been there, done that. So I kind of concede that to you. But at the end of the day, you are a professional basketball
player. But neither has Jason Tatum, and Jason Tatum hasn't been there, done that.
No, I understand that. But he's in a different role because he's going to get 30 minutes a game. He can take as many shots as he wants. Play defense, he's going to get as many shots as he wants. Rodney Hood and all of those other guys are not in the same scenario.
Rodney Hood got 11 minutes, 1 of 2 from the field. Man, he just scored his one bucket. He just got like 2 minutes left. I've seen enough to think that they can beat them. I'm not concerned about that. They'll play better at home. I think LeBron, if they come back 2-2, I think LeBron knows that if it comes down to a game seven or a closeout game, he knows that I can do this by myself if I need to. I think we're confident to say LeBron can beat them somewhat by himself.
I think you have to reevaluate that, Kent, mainly because Boston is a real complete team. And the thing is we just witnessed his third
game
40-point triple-double.
3-3. Who are you going to put your money on?
You already know who I picked to win the series, and I'm sticking to it because I picked it. But at the end of the day, based off of what we've witnessed so far, Boston is more complete. Yes or no?
Of course, I'm gonna say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They play better as a team. Yes, and I think Lou has enough pieces to play better as a team. At one point, they were when Larry Drew was coaching, but now you know Lou's come in back and all the rat. Look, let me look at the box score. Aaron Baines and Marcus Smart were the main two guys off the bench, 17 and 31 minutes. Right, so he basically has a what? Seven-eight-man rotation. And then he's splitting. Yeah, that's it. Ogilvy gets some minutes. He got like nine. So that's like an eight-man rotation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Lou, four. He's going nine deep. Now, so he's playing guys that he probably don't need to play. Jeff Green is producing for you. You can play him. You got to play Kyle Korver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think you – and I think if you got to pick between Larry Nance, Osman or Hood, I think Nance it would probably be the guy. You could probably get 9 minutes from him to spare to Tristan
but
or Kevin Love.
Ken, when you have wings like Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, how are you telling me that Rodney – you don't want to get
Carson
Rodney Hood off?
Get in the game.
No, I feel you. I feel that. But how do you not try to get – as a coach, Ken, right, it's your job to motivate and to get guys to perform their best.
Bro,
and,
he didn't even play Clarkson.
I feel you. But Clarkson is struggling.
Is this right? This can't be right. I thought we saw him on the court.
Did we? I don't remember seeing him.
Who, Clarkson?
Yeah.
Yeah,
he played briefly.
He played?
They said he hasn't played. Coach's decision.
Oh, maybe that was game one. I don't know. But either way, Ken, it is your job as a coach to try to get your guys motivated to play at a certain level. And if you're not – excuse me. If you're not playing well, the coach still has to have confidence in you to get you some minutes to see if you can get going. And when you have wings that are the size of Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum – you know what I'm saying? Or as tough, or Marcus Morris, or one of the Morris twins, and as tough as Marcus Smart, you got to give Ronnie a little bit of click and be like, hey, bro, like,
no,
what we going to do?
Yeah, yeah. So okay. So I'm in agreement there because Rodney Hood was aggressive in the first game. He was a little bit more passive in this game. They need him. He can easily go for 17 off the bench. For whatever reason, he hasn't found his way. I blame Lou. And
but
part
how
of that.
Can you blame Lou?
Because I'm sure they've told him that your job is to go get buckets.
And if he don't get buckets, how is that on Lou?
As a matter of fact, they've told him. Okay, you're right. But, and I was going to say somewhat on Rodney Hood. Because they want him to be that guy. They
it's
told
on
him
the
time.
Player. Ken, look, at the end of the day, it as a professional basketball player, it is your job to be ready to do what the coaching staff and your squad needs out of you. And you already alluded to the fact that they're telling him, we need you to get buckets. If he don't get buckets, that's on him. That's not on the coaching
staff.
They
don't play him. Play somebody that will be aggressive. Clarkson. Clarkson don't give a damn. Clarkson going to go out there and jack it up.
And okay, so again, Ken, this
which
is,
I thought Clarkson was in the game.
But what if Clarkson isn't playing well?
Hood isn't playing well.
I feel,
but at least Clarkson won't be scared to shoot.
Look, man, at the end of the day, Ken, all I know is that you can't win,
bro. You
can't win. I feel that you wanted two different ways with Tyronn Lue. Look, at the end of the
day, he has to coach better.
But when you say that. What do you mean? Because what I mean when I say Tyronn Lue needs to coach better, he needs to have an identity for his squad. He needs to have a system for his squad. He needs to take advantage of the skill sets of his squad.
All of that. That's coaching better.
But that doesn't mean if Rodney Hood isn't getting buckets, that's not on Ty Lue.
But you know what?
He's getting open shots. You can't tell me that these guys ain't getting open shots.
And you know what? And you're right. I understand that. But everything else you just named that Lue isn't doing contributes to Rodney Hood not getting those shots or not getting those buckets because he has no system for Rodney Hood to function. And remember, Rodney Hood came from Utah that had a system.
And I understand all of that. But you know what Cleveland does, Ken, is that they run sets. They run plays to get this shot. Right. And that's why I said that was the prime example, the difference between Brad Stevens and Ty Lue. Why? Because Ty Lue called the play that had one option, Ken. What happens if the defense overplays that, Ken?
It falls apart.
Exactly. But at the end of the day, you can't tell me that Kyle, Jordan, everybody else, they don't get open shots. You get open shots playing with LeBron James. And you get open shots because the coach calls your number. So we're going to run this play for you.
Man, Brad Stevens has, I don't know. It's just frustrating to watch because we've seen this. This is LeBron's career where his talent has been maximized by LeBron himself and nobody else. And you know, to see, it's like, it's the gift and the curse of LeBron James.
It is.
Like, you have all of this massive talent, but you haven't had a Brad Stevens. So here comes, like, he's had so many mountains to climb. Popovich, you know. And then, you know, he went to Miami and things kind of worked out with Popovich. Got him again, right? And
then now Golden State.
Rick Carlisle, well, that was his fault. But now, right, Golden State. And now maybe Brad Stevens. And you haven't had any of those pieces in your career at all. And everything you've done has been 80-90% you in terms of your career, you know. And I give Pat Riley, you know, he did a good job of defining and shaping the culture and all this other stuff. But it's a 40-piece triple double, dog. And they had a 7-point lead or something like that going into halftime. And what did I tell you? You cannot make those plays, those critical turnovers and plays going into halftime because you basically gifted them momentum and confidence.
Game suspension, are you kidding me?
Yeah, Robinson Cano.
Yeah, he on my fantasy squad.
Yeah. Damn. You gifted them confidence going into halftime. They were like, hey, man, LeBron went off and we still right there. So we just need to go do what we do. And they came out and did what they did. And again, Tristan, you being punked. They got Rough Riders. And look at this. But I like Tristan ain't no punk. Tristan to get at you. JR get at you. But still, like, it's everybody else. So, I don't know, man. Like, look, at the end of the day, they held home court. They did what they had to do. You guys heard our whole reaction watching this second half because that's basically what the other part of the podcast has been.
Pretty much.
To get out of here. But you know, they held down home court. They did what they're supposed to do. And I know the playoffs are different. And, well, clearly because Golden State lost to the Rockets and LeBron took 2 out of 3 against Boston. But we'll see. We'll see. Game 3 obviously is the most important game. And then Game 4 becomes the most important game. And then they come back to Boston. I think if Cleveland can manage to steal that one, then it's a wrap. So – but look at this. Look at this. You know what? You know what's on Lou? This defense.
I give you that.
Bro, like, there were so many defensive mistakes. Defense. Brad Stevens, man. They only had two
open shots.
And Brad Stevens and Tyronn Lue because he can't
coach. That is crazy.
No easy shots. Tyronn Lue can't get any easy shots.
I got to call my dad. He has to be watching. I'm surprised.
This is nuts, man.
I'm surprised he hasn't called me yet.
We might be witnessing the end of the LeBron James era.
Era of what? Like, no more finals or something? Era?
Yeah. This might be it.
Now, he look.
If Boston dethroned the king.
When you say that, you make it sound like LeBron's never going to get back. I think he's going to get back.
If he goes to Philly.
Yeah, he's not going to get it in Cleveland.
Put it on speaker.
Was you sleeping?
Did you cut
this off? Nah, turn the channel. Oh, so what you think? You still think LeBron got a chance?
Yep.
There we go.
So you think he gonna win 4 straight games?
What's going on, Dad?
Yeah.
How? How do you see this? You see Boston is clearly the better team.
Well, I ain't taking nothing away from LeBron. I didn't see him come back and do too much stuff. But I ain't taking nothing away from him.
He just had a 40-point triple-double, and they still lost by double digits.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Well, anybody else come through? Didn't nobody else come? Well, Love kind of came through, but J.R. Smith, nothing.
Yeah, I know you've been hard on J.R. Smith for the longest, so, yeah, we already expect that. But I told you. This is a wrap. Celtics, they're going to win this. They're going to win this series, I'm trying to tell you.
Okay, we'll see.
All right. I'm surprised you didn't call me, so that's why I was calling you.
Okay.
Yep. So do you think they make it 38-0 all time when up 2-0? All
right, so that's incredible. A lot of that was done with legendary players, Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett,
Bird and them,
Ray Allen, of course, and the other great. So that's somewhat misleading because a lot of it was built up early, but the record is the record. Now, 37-0 went ahead 2-0.
And then they show something where it was like 3-0 when they lose game one. Remember that stat they showed at the beginning of the game, right before jump ball?
Yeah.
Like Boston is 8-0 so far in this playoff, and LeBron James is 3-0 after losing, you know, the first game or whatever. Or losing a playoff game, the next game he always wins.
It's yeah, and he didn't. And so if LeBron breaks that record, does that add to his legacy?
Break record, like being down. If he goes down 0-3.
No.
Oh.
If he comes back, the Celtics are undefeated when they take a 2-0 lead. So, according to history,
Celtics as in this is team over. History. So Celtics in team history never lost up 2-0.
This Boston Celtics as an organization have never lost a series when they've been up 2-0.
37-0.
Wow.
If LeBron comes back,
come back from this and win this series.
Oh, yeah. Make it 37-1.
Yep. Because he's that stain.
Yep.
He's that stain. It
definitely adds.
Anything LeBron does that's positive or is unique to himself adds to his legacy with or without a championship.
Well, dang. Well, I think he can do it. I've seen enough. We saw Kevin Love show up. LeBron did his thing. Like B's dad just said, JR, nothing. So the way they were playing against Toronto, the other guys are not playing. Korver was okay. Mm-hmm. Look at this. Nobody else has stepped up, and if they do, that's why I think they can. Because, let me ask you guys this: can Boston play any better?
Yeah.
They can play a step better than this. Like, they can have good games.
How? I mean, this was they fought.
I mean, this is what
they came out down, and you know, at first, remember it was looking like before FIFA got here, it was like, okay, LeBron playing, he got a look on his face. Like, Cleveland about to probably, the first 6 minutes of this game, I was like, okay, Cleveland might win this one. But the resilience, man.
But coaching, we've seen Boston. Coaching. Boston is doing what they want to do,
yeah.
And they're
yeah.
playing Boston basketball.
Yes.
Have we seen Cleveland basketball yet?
No, not in this series.
Not in this series.
But here's the thing with Boston, right? Like, we know where they're going to get shot. Like, we know what to expect. I think the only difference in them playing a level higher is more consistency with their shots. You know what I'm saying? Because at the end of the day, what Brad Stevens does is he takes the thinking out of it. Like, he just puts you in place for you to succeed. Now, all you got to do is just hit the shots. I just think that they got to hit those open threes at a more consistent rate, and then we'll see the next level. But in terms of Cleveland, we haven't seen them in this series. Again, Ken, I pose the question, what is – Cleveland's identity? What do we need? How do we know when Cleveland plays well outside of LeBron getting a triple double or putting up gaudy numbers? What does that look like? Have we seen that? Do we know what that is?
Only is when Larry Drew was coaching, we've seen a little bit of it. They were in a really good rhythm.
But it was still LeBron-centric.
Yeah, it was, but they looked more like a basketball team. But since Lou came back, they've been a little bit more erratic. And but does any of that speak to their identity? Is this, when I look at, I just don't see it. I think it's LeBron a bust.
That's what and that's the problem. And that's why they're doomed. Like you said, man, it doesn't matter what happens, LeBron can't win the championship this way.
No, he can't. He can't. And I think, and you know what? I think I was thinking about this over the weekend after game one. And I think I don't want to see him go get waxed by Golden State anymore.
Yeah, no, because it's going to be waxed.
Yeah.
Like, I put it to you like this. If Cleveland plays Golden State.
Sweet.
Gentlemen sweep. Because of LeBron, how great LeBron is. I can't see him going out.
LeBron's going to be great.
He'll have a 60-point triple-double before he gets swept like that.
Sweet.
I'll give you that, B.
I'm not
I feel you. Right. You're not disrespecting
right.
LeBron.
Right.
But just the rest of the guys, I get you. I got you.
Sweet.
But at the end of the day, Ken, I'm with you, man. I don't want to see LeBron get waxed like that because he's too great to lose in this way, and that's all people going to say, oh, well, he's the greatest, ain't he? He's supposed to do something.
Yeah.
Like, come on, man.
All right, so I think the one – we're coming up on 2 hours. Okay, last thing. It don't even have to be quick. It was just something I was thinking about because this old – Oh, the Jordan documentary. You guys see that?
Yes.
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, it's a 10-hour documentary, which I'm assuming
10
it's
hours?
Yeah, but I'm assuming it's probably going to be broken up into like 5 parts. Just like kind of like that OJ joint. I think it's
Michael Jordan?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a 5-part. I think it's going to be just like that OJ one. They're going to talk about everything. It's going to probably start from his childhood.
I feel like I know it all. Man, do you know how many times I don't watch Come Fly With Me, man?
Yeah. Oh, this is going to be way deeper than Come Fly With Me. It's going to be deep.
I had a couple Jordan tapes growing up. Because
I think it's by ESPN and who else? Netflix?
Yeah.
ESPN, Netflix.
Oh, wow.
It's
going to be even deeper than a 30 for 30.
That's what I'm saying. It's going to be deep. Like I said, I'm thinking it's going to be just like that OJ documentary, that 5-part documentary that 30 for 30 did on them. I think they won an Oscar for that, too. But I think it's going to be on that level of deepness because they went deep with OJ, and I think this – it's gonna be the same way. I'm looking forward to seeing this. As someone that couldn't stand Jordan growing up, all right, that didn't mean I didn't respect him and I didn't know that he wasn't the man. But hey, look, as someone that loves basketball and just love the sport, I'm gonna watch this. I'm definitely gonna watch this, regardless of my hate for Jordan.
All right, so y'all know what this is, right? This is Michael Jordan competing. Without stepping on the court. He's tired of the LeBron James is the GOAT conversation. So he's going to put out this documentary to remind everyone that he's still the man. This is Jordan being petty,
but
man.
But you know what? Okay, now that you mention that, Kent, because I saw someone tweet that, and I didn't – this was before I knew the documentary was coming. So I was like, someone tweeted like, man, I'm so glad – MJ signed off on this documentary so we can stop this LeBron talk. I saw someone tweet that. So when I saw that, I'm like, I was like, sign off a documentary? I was like, what are they talking about? So then like maybe about 2 or 3 hours later, I saw on Bleacher Report, MJ, Netflix, ESPN, 10-hour documentary. I was like, oh, that's what that person was tweeting about. So it's funny you say that. And I'm like, damn, I saw a tweet similar to what you just said. That's funny.
So I think what's interesting, and y'all know my stance on the whole LeBron, MJ thing, but I think I may have to kind of step back a little bit. And the reason why I said that is because I never looked at all of the advanced stats that Michael Jordan put up, because obviously we didn't have that back then, right? Like we didn't have the per 36, all of those type of stats. We didn't have that. But when you look at those advanced stats, he's still ahead of LeBron. Jordan's the greatest. So I recant saying that LeBron is the greatest player I've ever watched. It is Jordan, because y'all know I'm a numbers guy. And Jordan still got the numbers.
Yeah.
Now the thing is,
and
is
accolades
and the accolades.
I mean, I'm talking about minus championships. I ain't. I'm not talking about six.
We talking about MVP, yeah. defensive yeah, player. Yeah, yeah, you got all that.
Yeah.
So for me, I had to, you know, kind of reel it back. LeBron is by far the greatest athlete that we've ever seen, and I think he's the best overall. You like the most. The most complete basketball player, but Jordan is the best, hands down. I'm not putting Jordan as the best anymore. I mean, LeBron as the best basketball player to ever play. That still is Michael Jordan, but the overall best, what he can do on the court is definitely LeBron for me. But definitely Michael Jordan is the best.
LeBron be on Mount Rushmore once his career said and done?
Hands down, he's right there next to Jordan.
Yeah. You can be Kareem, and a lot of people would be like, look. Why Kareem's name is not thrown out there?
A lot of people are saying Kareem is the greatest.
Yeah,
of all
it's the greatest of all time. Like a lot of people are saying that. Like people our age, you know, maybe a little bit older, are like Kareem is that dude. Like because this was someone that was highly tutored his entire life, like from high school to college, the NBA, like everything. It's like Jordan wasn't that. Like he wasn't highly tutored in UNC. You know, by the time he got to his second year in the NBA, that's when Jordan was like, to come fly with me and the greatness from here on out. But yeah, a lot of people like, look, Kareem, he created the unstoppable hook shot, which I'm surprised. You know, I know a lot of players emulate certain players, but I'm surprised no centers tried to like emulate that shot.
Shaq
like,
did somewhat.
Not like that.
Like I'm surprised. I'm surprised no one, no center. Like I'm surprised Akeem. Like just the centers we witnessed throughout the 80s.
Had a little bit.
He had his own jump hook.
Yeah, I'm just talking
about. He didn't have the sky
throughout
hook. There's 90s, a difference.
Yeah, throughout the 90s and 2000s, I'm surprised we haven't seen any centers try to, like, that's a like any 7 foot or plus, you know, taller guys try to emulate the jump sky hook. Because that's a freaking, if you 7 foot one, 7 foot two, that's an unblockable shot. You know what I'm saying? I'm surprised no players haven't, you know, you see players, you know, emulating Jordan to Kobe at fadeaways and doing all that, but, like, no one, I've never seen a big guy. It's just like out there trying to work on that sky hook because that's an unstoppable shot.
You know, I think you went somewhere where I wasn't gonna go, but there's a lot of validity to what you're saying. I think for me, man, the LeBron versus Jordan conversation,
I'm
like
sick of it actually.
That's where I was going.
I'm kind of sick of it,
and I think that's where I'm gonna tap
out. Enjoy the greatness. Because we got so many different players, it's great. Let's enjoy
it. It feels unnecessary,
doesn't it? Yeah, that's what it is. It feels unnecessary. It's
I think
like,
we got to that point.
Let's just sit back and enjoy LeBron the same way we enjoy Kobe Bryant, the same way we enjoyed Shaq, the same way we enjoy Allen Iverson. The same, like, let's enjoy that. You know what I'm saying? Let's enjoy these players, man. Like, listen, when people was going in all in Jordan, we were still loving Larry Bird and Magic and Isaiah and Charles Barkley and all. Like, you were still loving the players, but this whole LeBron and Jordan talk, I'm sick of it. I'm just tired of it.
Because I think we cheapen and marginalize and reduce LeBron's accomplishments,
right?
And
to some point, Jordan's too. Like they try to always put these certain numbers up, and it's like y'all trying to just like what Jordan's done in this game. So yeah, you're right.
Yeah, because you know we don't know what Jordan would have done against a Golden State,
right?
You know what I'm saying? And a Golden State with not one guy, but like three guys plus a Draymond plus his version of a Rodman. We don't know, like almost the damn near like a new modern day version of Showtime, you know. So we don't know what that was like, and unfortunately this was LeBron's journey, this was his path. So he ran against players and teams that were better than him, and he just didn't have that, and there's only so much that he can do. But you know, I was thinking about it, you know, just one morning or maybe, you know, and I was like, what do we gain from it?
Just this hyperbole, this rhetoric, it's a talking point because let's be honest. You know, people want to say Kobe, I think, was the heir apparent. Obviously, like the man modeled his game, you know, the way he walked, talked, everything was Jordan. But in terms of impact on the game, there hasn't been anybody close to Jordan outside of LeBron.
It's great barbershop talk.
It is.
Talk, fun talk, whatever. But at the end of the day, what do we, you know, like I don't win a prize. You know, I still got to go to bed and get up in the morning while he still dribble a ball and go home to his million-dollar home and his business is like. And I think, you know, the media is wearing it out, you know, and if he goes losing another finals, if he loses this series, it's going to be a knock on him. And it's like, you know, at the end of the day, man, this guy's had a great career. He's impacted. Excuse me. He's impacted the game in ways that other players haven't. And you're right, B. Let's just enjoy it for what it is and just be done with it. We're not going to get anywhere with that conversation.
It's never another of – you can name a list of great guys. It's never another Dirk Nowitzki. It's never another Jason Kidd. It's never another Penny Hardaway. It's never another Allen Iverson. Like, enjoy that player for what they bring to the game and just keep it moving.
Yeah, so that's it. That's why I'm just done, you know. And I'm done listening to them people debate it. Yep. Like I turn every, you know, I don't even watch Undisputed because that's all they're gonna talk about anymore.
Yep.
I love how Stephen A. Smith, when it was brought up, was like, "It's Jordan. Why are we gonna do this?" Like he's just like, "This is ridiculous." Like I don't even think he even wants to debate it anymore. Like,
it's going nowhere.
And now after whatever happens here, it's officially over. So you know. There's no point in talking about it anymore.
I'm not gonna add to it.
Go ahead.
No. We need it's a wrap.
All right, y'all. We're about to get out of here, man. This was, I guess, you just watched the game or listened to the game with Dead in Sports.
Right.
So we'll catch you guys next time. Peace.
So how crazy is it that the minority owner of the Steelers is going to buy the Panthers for $2.2 billion in cash?
Yeah, we were talking about that in our group meeting.
When I saw – because you get groups, you get monies, you pull shit. But when I saw in cash, like, nigga –
excuse me. You said cash?
Who the fuck – where you get $2.2 billion in cash, bro? Like, I want to know what $2.2 billion in cash look like. Like, can we fill up this whole shit?
Like, how much space does it take up?
Like, how you going to deposit that? Like, how? Yeah, bro, I just want to deposit this $2.2 billion in cash. Like, how do you count? How do you verify that's $2.2
billion? Man, that's crazy.
That's a lot of fucking money, man.
It's tight in here. You don't think we should move this table back that way? I mean, I can see how. Who sits over here? Mike and who else?
Yeah.
Yeah, because Ross is right there. Sophie's right there.